rights away. We'll give them hell every time. This is a union town. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking with Pennsylvania State Representative Thomas Caltagirone. We'll talk about this as power still in some areas may not be on. Who do we hold accountable? For too long, I think we've allowed these electric companies to maybe not respond as quickly. I've got friends who live in D.C. Who say, you know, power's off all the time. The wind blows sideways, power goes off. And it seems like nothing ever gets done. Well, Representative Caltagirone's going to come up with with something to help push them in the right direction. We'll talk about that piece of legislation, maybe some other things going on here in the state of Pennsylvania. Oh, I don't know. The attack on workers, the attack on we the people, the attack on what is public, maybe something. Also in the first hour, Jeanette Bodorf's going to be here to talk about the big organizing victory at the Allegheny Lutheran Nursing Home out in Johnstown, PA. The workers there today voted to join SEIU Healthcare, so we'll talk about that victory. In the second hour, Lou Prince. Good friend of the program, owner of Vintage Vinyl out in St. Louis, Missouri, going to talk about why it's so important. Why it's so important to small business that the Buffett tax go into place. Why we hold corporate America accountable like we hold small business. And a new report also out, we're going to talk about how big corporations, actually we're paying them to hang around. Pretty amazing. We're giving them tax dollars. Just to stay here. Kind of makes you wonder. Also, Eric Loomis, assistant professor over at the University of Rhode Island, going to be here talking about general strikes in lieu of what happened yesterday in Oakland. A major, major victory, I think. You shut down a major port, a show of strength. And it's one of those times where the 1%, the very wealthy, the elitists, have to take notice that people are angry. People are struggling. People are upset. What do you do in the face of that then? You know, how do we make this opportunity here? Also in the third hour, our good friend Stosh, he kept saying, you know what, we want Buy American people. So we've asked Todd Lipscomb to come talk about buying American, why we need to keep it here in the U.S. and how we can still buy American made products. So also we'll be pushing his website as well, one of the things that he does. Before we start into everything, major victory, I have to say. The Credit Union National Association has reported that since September 29th, they have seen 650,000 people open up accounts in their banks. In their credit unions. Sorry, not banks. Which means, you know, now stop and think. September 29th, that was the day Bank of America said, we're going to start charging all you little people that $5 a month to use that debit card. You know, we should have done this back when they said, oh, here, take these ATM cards. Oh, aren't they wonderful? They cut down on our labor costs. And, oh, yeah, please do this. And then they started charging us. I think it was 50 cents at first, and it was a buck. I've seen places $5 now. Now, think about it this way. Last year, the entire year, only 600,000 new members went to credit unions. So stop and think about since September 29th. 650,000 people, and you still have time, bank transfer day or make the banks pay day, whatever it is you want to call it, is this Saturday. So I'm hoping folks take advantage of it, get out to their bank, say, you know what, too big to fail bank, sayonara. We're going to somewhere where they actually care about us. So big victory. I'm really, really happy, happy to see that. So here it is, the big prayer caucus member. Representative Tom Price from Georgia, he was on Fox News talking about the big In God We Trust resolution. He said the resolution was necessary because we felt it was appropriate to remind the president what, in fact, the motto of our great country is. I actually had to kind of get a kick out of this because I have an acquaintance who's a Tea Party guy. Big Tea Party constitutionalist. He actually believes the founders chose E Pluribus Unum. And he actually buys into the whole concept of, you know, out of many comes one, all the states coming together to make one nation, kind of buys that. But that aside, our Republican friends thought it was so important to do this. Now, if you remember back in 2002, they did the exact same thing. Now, Bush was president. I don't know how you could not know that he believed that. But they reaffirmed it back in 2002. So I gotta be honest. You know, back then it was kind of a distraction. It got the masses salivating. So we get it. You really like telling us how godly you are. I'm right there with you. To be honest, it makes it all that much more fun to watch. When your sanctimonious, self-righteous, holier-than-thou, hypocritical behinds have to stand up in front of the cameras and all weepy-eyed and apologizing for, I don't know, having sex with young boys or doing the Larry Craig thing in the airport bathroom. Love that. But I get it. You've made your point. The simpletons are very happy. The people who think that it's important and a reason to vote for you, mission accomplished, you did it. Now can we actually act like one nation? Under God, indivisible. Can we do that now? Can we actually get to some work? Whatever happened to the laser-like focus on jobs and that laser-like focus on the economy that the Republicans promised us, that Eric Cantor promised us? Remember the Cantor rule? Laser-like focus, jobs, economy. It's kind of a joke now, as is the Grand Pledge. The Grand Pledge to America. 48 pages. 27 pages of smiling white people with pictures. Color, high color pictures. 21 pages of very flowery language. Not much substance, but a lot of flowery language. But it did promise jobs, jobs, jobs. Do you remember the Cantor rule? You remember him saying, each day we will hold ourselves accountable by asking the following questions. Are our efforts addressing job creations and the economy? Are they cutting spending? Are they shrinking the size of government while protecting and expanding individual liberty? If not, why? Why? So I asked the question, you know, is the In God We Trust thing, is that cutting spending? No, actually going to probably add some spending because they're going to probably want to put some signs up. Is it creating jobs? Well, maybe those jobs putting signs up, but that's not really the kind of spending that they're into. So I got a question, you know, where's the accountability? You know? And to kind of show you how godly we are, I found it funny, like I did yesterday, there was a story, but today I find it funny that the Texas state representative, this guy named Larry Taylor, the head of the Republican caucus there in Texas, he had to issue a written apology. Evidently, our good Christian used a Jewish slur while telling the Texas Windstorm Insurance Association not to nitpick and not to do that, you know, not to, you know, try to bring them down in the price. And then he added in the stupid Rick Perry way, oh, that was probably a bad term, wasn't it? Oh, yeah, probably a bad thing. He said in the written statement at the Legislative Oversight Committee hearing today, I inadvertently used a phrase that many people may find offensive. I corrected myself immediately. Oh, yeah, you did. Sure. Good luck on that. I regret my poor choice of words, and I sincerely apologize for any harm it may cause. So there, your sanctimonious sorry behind doing what you do. And you got to know Texas is one of the more godly states. And you may remember how in Texas some tried to get their Speaker of the House, this guy Joe Strauss, kicked to the curb. Joe Strauss is Jewish, kicked to the curb because, as one Republican official put it, I got into politics to put Christian conservatives into office. They're the people who do the best jobs. So there you go. But now that we put that out of the way, can we start acting like it? I'm in favor of that, buying into it. According to new census data, however, the number of Americans living below the poverty line has hit a record number of 20.5 million people. Those living in high poverty neighborhoods, that has increased 41%. And now we have 1 in 15 people who are considered to be the poorest of the poor. They're saying that is the highest level in 35 years. So what I find interesting in this one nation under God thing, this country we got here, you've got states like Michigan, who thought it'd be a great idea for all those people on food stamps, because understand, 40 million people in this country are sufficiently in need that they're collecting food stamps. But they're saying in Michigan that, you know what? If you've got assets, and we're going to check your bank account, if you've got assets above $5,000, you don't get anything from us. If you've got a car or truck worth $15,000, you're out of luck. Nothing for you. And the guy who's the head of their Department of Health and Human Services, this guy Brian Rooney, he says Michigan just wants to weed out people who are gaming the system. He said if you're driving an Escalade, maybe it's time to find a car that better fits your economic situation. So I'm looking at this and I'm going, really? Somebody has fallen on hard times and you're going to make them liquidate everything in order to collect $134 a month per person so that they can feed themselves, or $290 a month so that they can feed their household? I mean, think about it. $33.50 a week, and we're heading into the challenge. Can you live on what food stamps gives you? And it's $33.50 a week. And for a family, $290 a month, that's $72.50 per week. Now, that may be 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 people. That's it, $72.50. And I find it interesting that, you know, we're talking about in God we trust while trying to take away food that feeds families. And what really, really irks me is you look at the fact that some of these big banks, like U.S. Bancorp, for instance, they're a company that provides unemployment debit cards. They made $357 million in revenue, because they got to handle that card. And you look at J.P. Morgan, who made $5.5 billion in net revenue. They've got a division that handles these cards, and they make a nice, tidy profit from it. At a time when the country's struggling, at a time when we're talking about the religion thing, which I'm all in favor of, I wish we would act like it. Instead of talking about it, let's do it. Instead of talking about plastering the Ten Commandments everywhere, let's actually know them and live them. Just a quick thought. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show. Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Occupy Oakland's general strike drew thousands of supporters in a day of action Wednesday that included rallies and a march in the port of Oakland with the intent of shutting it down. Port Director Omar Benjamin said the port was effectively shut down by the general strike. Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan called for a minimal police presence and said the city of Oakland is progressive and supports the goals of the Occupy Wall Street movement.
She said she was working with the Oakland police chief to ensure that General Stryker's got their message across without the conflict that marred last week's events. She referred to the police attack on the Occupy Oakland protest that hospitalized Iraq War vet Scott Olson with a skull fracture. The Oakland Education Association is among the unions that supported the Oakland General Strike. OEA President Betty Olson Jones.
It must be over 10,000 now. Incredible energy. It's just a huge range of ages, from little tiny kids to grandmothers carrying signs, every ethnicity you can imagine. It's just been beautiful. There's a real arc from Madison that helps ignite a lot of this, and it's just very exciting to see that it's catching hold throughout the country.
Some Oakland businesses put up signs saying they were closed during the general strike, and Oakland's Grand Lake Movie Theater replaced its usual movie marquee with this message: "We proudly support the Occupy Wall Street movement, closed Wednesday to support the strike."
Know that you are part of the 99%. It's important that our students see this historic moment and that they participate in whatever way they can. Everybody across the country needs to understand there is such a connection between the banks and the corporations being bailed out and what's happening to education and social services throughout this country. It's not right. It needs to change.
Due to alleged company misconduct, the UFCW may get another union election at a New York Target store. Jesse Russell reports.
The National Labor Relations Board has reviewed new evidence that suggests the corporation may have used the threat of store closure to intimidate employees into voting against representation by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The UFCW has been billing a case that the retailer violated labor laws at a Valley Stream Long Island location leading up to the vote. Other allegations include management interrogating workers thought to be organizing and illegal surveillance. If the allegations prove to have merit, the NLRB could schedule a second election. The union is also seeking more information on an employee they say was fired for union activity. That complaint had previously been withdrawn due to a lack of evidence. Target doesn't currently have any unionized stores, but the UFCW has active campaigns at nearly a dozen in New York.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is What Democracy Looks Like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
To the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. So we had the big storms come through. Folks without power for quite some time. Some of my friends in Washington, D.C. have said, you know, every time we get a storm comes through, it's weeks before the power is restored. And you go, why? Why is that? Why does that happen? Why can't things be fixed quickly? Why does it go down at all? Interesting questions. That's why I've asked State Representative Thomas Calderon to come talk to us about his bill that he's introduced, HB 1959. It would require utility companies to financially compensate customers who are adversely affected for unreasonably long power outages. Wow. Big thing. Representative, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you, sir. It's nice to talk to you tonight.
You know, I've got friends in D.C. who, you know, every time it snows, the power's out for a week. This kind of thing, I think they'd be very happy to hear about.
Well, you know what I just don't understand? The commission has established various orders and requirements designed to ensure that the continued safety, adequacy, and reliability of the generation, transmission, and distribution of electricity in the Commonwealth, takes precedence. Well, these reliability standards evidently are falling between the cracks somewhere, because the frequency and duration of the unplanned electric outages is getting to be pretty constant in this state and many other states, I'm sure. They're supposed to provide the reliability of electric service to us. It's a safety thing for many, many homes and businesses. What people aren't realizing, like in Reading here, I was without electricity this whole week, starting from Saturday until just this evening. It finally came back on.
Let me ask you.
What I don't understand is the number of linemen, and I've done some research on this, and I'm going to have a hearing on December the 19th in Harrisburg on my legislation with the policy committee. I'm just fed up with the nonsense.
They tell me,
MedEd, that they provide a service here in Reading. They have 296 linemen. Well, I was told that they were substantially reduced over the years. In addition to that, I asked the president of MedEd, who appeared before members of the House in a meeting yesterday morning, I said, you know, how many linemen have you gotten rid of over the years? No real response. Well, through attrition. I wanted a number. I couldn't get it. How quickly do they respond to this? Well, they bring in all these out-of-state crews, and they can't find the downed line. I was told on my way to Philadelphia today that in the J.C. Penney parking lot in Muhlenberg Township, Berks County, Wednesday, 11-2-11, 40 to 50 trucks, sitting in the J.C. Penney lot for over 2 hours between the hours of 1 and 3 p.m. I asked them about their equipment, their inspection, maintenance, the repair plan. How much did all the companies lose by being closed down? And then they tell us about they have a meteorologist. So I said, okay, they're supposed to predict the weather, right? You knew this was coming.
Right.
Irene, Lee, and the snowstorm. What were you doing to prepare? You know, why aren't you cutting down more tree limbs? Well, we spend $15 million. I said, well, maybe you ought to spend more. Your CEO makes $7.5 million.
Good point.
And most of the guys, $7.5 million. I'm sorry, $7.7 million. I have the figures here in front of me. And the underlings that are under this guy, $2.7 million, $2.3 million, $1.8 million, $2.6 million. And I'm thinking, those are some pretty nice salaries.
Absolutely.
But top management.
Yeah, here's the thing. You know, I remember when I first moved to Pennsylvania, we were having this discussion back in the mid-90s. And I remember the commercial on the radio, you know, what do you want, choice? What do you think this is, Pennsylvania? And they were pushing this energy deregulation. It was going to be this privatized utopian society where we were going to get cheap prices and everything would be wonderful. And all I keep seeing, worse service.
It's all about the bottom line. I'm convinced of that. Look, they're monopolies. We have no other choice. When you come home at night, you want to hit the switch on. You want to have dependable, safe electricity power. You need it for your heating system, and many people need it for the water pumps and whatnot. So without that electricity, how many people were suffering? The elderly. I have a home across the street where they have about 5 invalid children. They had to move them out. I had asked people with aspirators that had to have private generators brought in to keep people alive. I mean, I had Alvernia University closed down. I had all the businesses in East Reading closed down. All the homes, all the apartments, the senior citizen home. They had a helicopter. I had a laugh when I heard this on the TV. They have a helicopter. Oh, they were advertising like the devil on the news and especially the radio station that they were doing. Okay, yeah, it was an unusual event. Aren't you prepared for it? They had a helicopter up trying to find the locations. Why waste money on a helicopter when you have ground crews?
Wow.
And they wanted people to call in where the lines were and everything else. And I remember with the last major storm we had before the snowstorm, I went for a whole week again without electricity. So during the day, I drove down after 2 days and found one of the crews, and I said, I know where the lines are down. I said, there's one light down. I live up on Hill Road in Reading. And right behind me, there's a pole down, and right down at the East End Athletic Club, there's another big transformer down there. I said, did you guys, you know, so they looked at it. It took them another 4 days until they finally repaired them. They brought all these crews in from out of state. They don't know our area. They don't have enough men. I said, why aren't you reinforcing these poles? Why aren't you replacing bad poles and bad poles?
That would take investment.
Why aren't you putting better lines up? Why aren't you putting better reinforcements to hold the lines up? Why can't you enclose those lines? How about burying some of the lines? Will it be too costly? Well, you've got to do something. This is not dependable service that we're getting.
Well, I mean, it's not their lives.
Terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's not their lives that are on the line. And as you pointed out, you've got kids, you've got vulnerable seniors. The reality is they don't care. And this is why I was dead set against the privatization, this whole nonsensical deregulation, that you knew this was coming. And nobody is going to tell me that they didn't know this would be the inevitable outcome, because this is what happens every single time. And across this state, we're talking about more privatization, privatizing the state wine and spirit shop, privatizing parks, privatizing roads and bridges. It's nuts.
Yeah, it is nuts, because it doesn't work. You know, look, these are private entities, utility companies, okay? They make very good profits. They are monopolies. You know, who are you going to shop around with? Most of the people stayed with their companies because they felt they're reliable and dependable. And I don't knock the people that have the jobs. I understand. They're trying to do the best they can. And nature is what nature is. However, can't you do more preventative maintenance? Can't you have a better response time? My legislation basically is a shot across the bow. For every kilowatt hour you're down, they have to give you a credit on your next bill.
Beautiful.
I have a swimming pool up here in Total Air. So the month before I shut everything down, my bill was $250. I paid it because I know I used the service. You pay for it. Okay, so then the storm hits. Now, my pool is down, my air conditioning is down, and I'm without electricity for a whole week. My bill was an estimated bill, and this is another game they play. They give me an estimated bill of $300. And I thought, geez, that's crazy. I didn't have any air on. The pool was shut down. I was without electricity. My bill should have been, I thought, $50 less. Well, every other month they read the meter. If you call for an estimated reading, they will sometimes charge you for that estimated billing that they'll perform the service to come up to read the meter. Well, the meter was read this past month. My bill was $97. So I called them and I said, hey, you were holding my money. Do I get interest on that? Oh, no.
No, no.
Well, why'd you give me an estimated bill? Why didn't you read the meter? Well, we don't have enough manpower to do that, and that's expensive to do that. So I find out PP&L reads their meters every month.
Yep.
MedEd doesn't.
Well, I mean,
what's the game?
Yeah, at the end of the day, though, I mean, what you're talking about is jobs. I mean, they have cut a lot of and to me, it was all union busting. The whole deregulation thing, to me, that's what it was in essence, getting rid of all those union workers, kicking them to the curb, and bringing in these private contractors. As you see these trucks lined up coming from other states, how many of them do you think are union workers?
None of them. I dare say none of them are. And the same way with the tree trimmers. They don't even basically contract that out. They vary very little. I mean, I'd like to find out, and I'm going to pressure the PUC on this, because I listened to their diatribe that they had after the last storm, not after this one, and it was like sugarcoating. And I thought, you guys aren't asking the tough questions. Why they have a customer average interruption duration index, and then they have a systems average interruption frequency index. And these durations and indexes and everything else, and I'm looking at the chart here and I'm thinking, MedEd was one of the worst. And some of the others weren't much better. And I'm thinking, well, if I'm reading these reports correctly that's put out by the PUC, why aren't they pressuring these companies to do more to guarantee the customers the service they've been paying for? I mean, these are absolutely essential services.
Absolutely.
I was thinking just the other day, what would really happen if we had either a man-made disaster with a terrorist attack of some sort and or a real series of natural disasters from Mother Nature? How prepared are we to respond to these incidents? This is showing me that we have Achilles' heel in this entire area, and we're not prepared for it.
Yeah, and if you look at what happened in Ohio and the western part of Pennsylvania, parts of New York, a couple years back where the power was off for, I think it was a little over a week, they had no power whatsoever. And back then I was calling for investment in the grid. And what I'd like to ask you, Representative Calderon, is, look, at the end of the day, as you've said, this is a monopoly. We can't go and go somewhere else. The wire's coming into our house. Those are the companies that belong to. Mm-hmm. Why don't we take this back and make it part of the commons again? So, you know what? You're going to make a profit, but you're going to provide a service and we're going to oversee it. I mean, it makes no sense to me that you have this model of giving them a monopoly and then saying, oh, by the way, take as much profit as you want and end up where we are today.
Well, you know, they keep saying about the free market system. You know what I'd like to say to my brothers that say that? Well, you talk to my business people now that lost all that money. Redner's down the road from me. They had to give, they were closed, they had to empty out all their freezers and meats and all that other stuff. They were giving it to the shelters and the pantries because it would have spoiled. They couldn't open. The gas stations couldn't open where I get my gas. I couldn't get gas there. The pumps weren't operating. The stores closed.
But here's the thing.
How much of an impact?
When you're talking about the free market, and this is what drives me nuts about people who seem to be beholden to this ideology that the free market will dictate, you have to be able to walk away from any deal, that anything that happens. In order for something to be free, you have to have the freedom to walk away. Sorry, in this day and age, you don't have the freedom to walk away from electricity coming into your house unless you're going to heat your home with sticks and you're going to live by candlelight, which really not going to happen.
Well, and you know, some people were throwing stones at me saying this is ridiculous, you know. Why don't I get a life and deal with a lot of other important issues? Well, I wish that person or persons, if they're really feeling that way, let them go without electric power for any length of time and see how they respond.
Yep.
See how their life is altered and affected. I mean, this is just outrageous.
But ultimately, what I see you're doing here, to me, this is a jobs bill. This is
absolutely
saying, look, for your own radical self-interest, you don't want to be hit with these fines. Why don't you hire some people to do the preventative things that need to be happening? Like you said, bury some wires, maintain the ones you've got, put up new poles, cut trees. That's a lot of work that needs to be done that isn't being done. And the $15 million that they claim they're spending on it, well, you ticked off more than $15 million in CEO and executive pay. Why not take some of that and put some other people back to work?
Well, and the thing is, why aren't they using better equipment and materials? Why aren't they replacing a lot of these, you know, in the location of the transmission?
That would hurt our profits.
Yeah, I mean, put up better lines, put up better transformers, put up better poles. I know it's going to cost more, but how much money did the utilities lose also? Because they lost money while they weren't generating electricity to the homes and businesses, so they had a substantial loss. I think it would be in their best interest to do these things, but I know that the IBEW guys that have told me, they said, Tommy, they cut back tremendously on their linemen, and I think that was across the board in every community in this state with every utility. That was a way to save money, cut jobs, save money. But then who was the loser? The consumer.
Yep. You and me and my grandmother and everybody else. So let me ask you a last question I've got. What do we do? How do I help you? What do our listeners do? How do we get this through?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I met this past Thursday, and I don't want to get political because I have a tremendous amount of respect for the Republicans that I deal with. I was, when the meeting started, I was the only Democrat there. There were about 15 Republicans. By the time that meeting got over, several Republicans came up to me and said, put me on your bill, put me on your bill. What I think the public needs to do is call their legislators, House members and senators, and tell them, we need some explanation from these electric utility companies as to why they are not better prepared in these emergencies.
Yep.
How many more emergencies are we going to have this winter? This may very well be a precursor to what we're going to be facing come the entire winter. And how many more outages are we going to have? How fast will the response be?
Yep.
I think they need to find out the answers to the questions I've been rolling out here. You know, nobody wants to put them out of business. I'm not suggesting.
No.
They're a service, and we need
absolutely
them. They need to be better regulated. They need to start answering to the citizens.
That whole accountability thing Republicans love to and Democrats love to throw out there. I'm with you.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
And you know, like I said, I understand they have a tough job. And I think the employees by far do a great job. And I'm not throwing stones at them. All I'm saying is the executive management decisions that are being made, and that's at the top.
Yep.
If they're cutting back, to save money, to improve the bottom line. They're shortchanging us, the consumers, because we're going through tremendous outages, which are causing tremendous problems. I keep saying to the Republicans, look at what the business community lost during these outages.
Yep.
How much money did they lose? And it's a ripple effect then, let alone the poor people that have their homes that are without heat, without light, without water. I mean, come on, cut me a break. Something's wrong with this picture.
I'm right there with you. And everyone, call your state rep, your state senator. House Bill 1959, proposed by Representative Thomas Calderon. I appreciate you coming on, talking with us.
Thank you.
As this
thank
moves
you,
down sir. The road, we'd love to have you back talking about this issue.
Anytime, sir, and thank you very much.
All right, thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Many big-time newspapers have run mocking pieces by political pundits about the Occupy movement, denigrating it as confused and chaotic. In USA Today, for example, right-wing pundit Cal Thomas recently opined that, to the extent anyone can understand their core message, the occupiers apparently despise business and capitalism. Well, no, Cal. They despise corporate greed and political corruption, and their core message is really quite clear. The bankers, bosses, and others who make up the richest 1% of our society are further enriching themselves by knocking down the 99%. Maybe an up-close example of this would help Thomas see what the majority of Americans who support the Occupy movement are experiencing. Look no further than the very newspaper chain that's paying him to pontificate so cluelessly. Gannett, which owns USA Today and about 80 other papers, is a financial and journalistic wreck. In the past 6 years, its stock price has collapsed by 750%. It has fired 20,000 employees, stripped its newsrooms of their ability to do serious reporting, and cut the pay of remaining journalists while insisting that they work longer hours with less support. Craig Dubow, Gannett's CEO since 2005, presided over this debacle. He's now out, but he wasn't fired, as you and I would have been for such a failure. No, no. Instead, Gannett's board of directors handed Dubow, get this, $37 million as a go-away gift. This cushion of luxury came on top of the $16 million he was given in salary and bonuses during the past 2 years, as those workers who produced the product were being dumped and the corporation was tanking. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, Mr. Thomas, that's the reason so many are in the streets and in support of what the occupiers are saying. Can you relate?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news to you out there. Oh, now the good old union has come in here to clear. Which side of the world? Which side of the world?
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, I look at that bill proposed by State Rep Calderon, and to be honest, it's a jobs bill. There is so much that they should be investing in, and it's all part of the infrastructure, in my opinion. But again, what they were trying to do, and I firmly believe this during the whole deregulation thing, was kicking those unionized workers to the curb and making sure that they had an exploitable workforce, which is why I think right now is the time where workers need to stand up, fight back, and say, you know what, we need to have a voice on the job. And I'm thrilled to hear that out in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, the workers at the Allegheny Lutheran home there, a nursing home that takes care of people's grandmothers and their parents, that these folks decided, you know what, we want to have a voice. We want to be able to take care of our patients and still make a decent living. That's why I've asked Jeanette Bottorff to come on and talk to us, one of the workers there who today voted for that union. Jeanette, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
Exciting times, yes?
Yes.
How are the people there feeling? Today was the vote, I understand, a positive election. What kind of sentiments are you guys feeling right now?
We're feeling very excited, very relieved, and ready to work with our management to come to a fair agreement.
There you go. Let me ask you, people say, well, you're greedy union workers, they just want wages. Curious, what was the reason that made you go in that direction and say, you know what, we'd like to have representation? What were some of the reasons?
Well, the number one reason was our residents. Our residents is somebody, they're somebody's grandmother, mother, father, sister, brother, and they built this country, and they deserve to have the best care possible, the best supplies, and the best workers that they can have.
So it wasn't you being greedy, was it?
No.
Because, that's the right-wing frame. Anytime someone says, I would like to have a voice where I work, it's always the greed thing. And I rarely find that to be the case. What I find it to be the case is folks are treated poorly. They want to have a voice in what's being done around them and in the conditions in which they labor. And I got to be honest with you. My mother worked in a nursing home for years when I was a kid. It is one of the most back-breaking, thankless jobs that I can think of. And I applaud you and your coworkers for doing it. Because, to be honest, someday I'll probably need it. But I do believe you should absolutely have a voice in what goes on where you're at.
What makes it very difficult for us is the residents, we don't have enough supplies, or we run low on supplies. Our staffing ratio is very bad. We're lucky if we can spend, 10 or 15 minutes getting a resident ready for the day because we're so short and so ragged. And, they don't live where we work. We work in their home, and they deserve the utmost respect, and they deserve the best care and the best supplies, and they're not getting it.
And this is going to help because I, like many people, I thought maybe there were some federal laws, maybe some state laws, maybe something that dictates anything like that.
There is. There's, a minimum per hour per resident ratio, which unfortunately, our nursing home is one that goes at the state minimum or as close to the state minimum as they can. I work in the skilled nursing facility with 63 beds, and we average 6 nurse's aides for 63 residents.
That's more than 10 people per nurse.
Right. And, it's difficult. And I've been in this facility for about a year. I've been doing this for about 15 years. And it's been very hard for me to stay in a facility long term because it's all become about the money. It's not become about making sure that they get everything that they need. It's about the dollar.
Yeah, welcome to the world of healthcare in America.
Yeah, but unfortunately, healthcare workers can't afford the healthcare.
Excellent point. So this is going to help, I hope, get you in the right direction, and I hope it's going to get you a voice in what goes on and maybe bring down some of those numbers, because I think the patients deserve to have a little more attention. And I'm thinking about this, a little over 10 people, an 8-hour shift, that's like 40 minutes a person per day. I mean, that's, I don't know, that doesn't seem like an awful lot of time to me.
It's not. It isn't. And the thing is that this particular nursing home, this is the third time in the last 20 years that they've tried to unionize. And it's finally come to be today. And this is our way of supporting the 99 percenters because we're fortunate that we do have a job, whether it's a low-paying job or not. This is our way of standing up for our rights, and we now have a voice.
And that does it feel good? I mean, I got to be honest. I've never not had a union job. I've been very fortunate in my working life that I've always had the ability to have to say what was on my mind. If I didn't like something, the boss knew it. How does that feel?
Well, they've always known when I didn't like something, but didn't mean that I had a job the next day.
And then that's the key. I mean, you can say what you want, but they have the right to fire you then.
Right, it feels great. I'm married to a union man. He's been a union man since he was 18 years old. His father before him was a union man. And it feels great to finally be able to join my husband in the the rest of the country that is union and be able to have a voice and stand up for what I believe in and not be afraid to lose my job tomorrow over it.
So I wish you nothing but the best of luck. I wish nothing but the best for you and your coworkers as you move towards the first contract. And if there's anything we can do to help, please remember you've got a friend here at the Rick Smith Show.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jeanette. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm fighting till the end, and we're not going to break tonight, and we're not going to bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, a union town, all down the line. This is a union town, a union town, all down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, a union town, all down the line.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we bet.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got our rates so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
We are AFSCME.
We are AFSCME.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, you think about that, and, you know, it was during the break I was thinking about, you know, 63 residents, 10 nurses. You know, for each individual nurse, you're talking about 40 minutes with each patient. That's getting them ready in the morning. You got, I think she said 15 minutes to get them ready. You've got to feed them. You've got to make sure that when they go to the bathroom, they get help. You got to make sure that the paperwork is done. I mean, it's, where's the care? I mean, it just seems like, best of luck to them. And it's great to hear good news, and it's great to hear folks actually standing up and fighting back. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Stosh on line one. How you doing tonight, Stosh?
Pretty good, Rick. Thank you. Thank you for picking up on that. Buy America.
Yep. We're gonna have Todd Lipscomb a little bit later in the program. His website, madeinusaforever.com. We've got a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. Gonna talk a little bit about how we do that.
Good, good. Thing is, we just have to, this is another part of the sit-in movement, to take back your money from the bank movement. This is just another part of taking back America, reclaiming what we should have been doing a long time ago. That is buying stuff that's made from here, rejecting all the name brand Nikes, Pumas, Air Jordan, all that stuff. Got to go American.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was nice, but look what it has gotten us.
Well, we've got to be more class conscious. We have to think about how does it affect us as a whole, as a working class, as a nation of workers. When you buy that cheap product from overseas, how does it benefit you and me, the working person? It doesn't. It actually harms us. When you go to these big banks and you bank with one of the too big to fail banks, how does it help us? It doesn't. It hurts us. So we got to start think. We got to change the way we think, Stosh.
Yep, and by you and the guys getting ready to have come on, pushing the idea of, we have to think about how we're spending our money. Because when we spend the money to these big bankers and stuff like that, they're not benefiting us at all.
Absolutely. I appreciate the call, brother.
All right.
Thanks so much. I don't know if you saw this in the news today. Evidently, Elizabeth Warren, who's running for Senate up in Massachusetts, was holding a town hall meeting. I think it was the VFW in Brockton, Massachusetts. She was talking to a bunch of people, and one of these guys stood up, and you knew looking at him he was struggling. You knew he was probably having a tough go of it, and you knew he was probably a teabagger. He stood up and he said, "You know, I've been out of work since February of 2010, and I understand that you are, according to the print media, and I think I saw you on television taking credit for that occupation movement." And she handled it really well. She said, "You know, I'm sorry you're having trouble, but yeah, I've been protesting Wall Street most of my life. The reality is the problem." And she says, "I'm also very sorry to hear that the recent jobs bill that would have brought 22,000 jobs to Massachusetts didn't pass the Senate." So he goes on. He says, "Well, you know, okay, you know, since you asked, I also want to say about the Occupy Wall Street." She said, "I've been protesting Wall Street for all my life and all this." He goes on, "Yeah, so has the Tea Party. If you're the intellectual creator of the so-called party," he said, "you're a socialist whore, and I don't want anything to do with you." And, you know, I heard him say this, and I go, you know, really? I mean, was that the best you could come up with? I mean, is that where you went? Did you come to the meeting just for that? Because really, I did. I felt sorry for the guy. Because you could see he was having a tough way. And I was talking to a friend a little earlier about it. And, you know, this is exactly the guy who is getting screwed every day. And yet he's inundated by right-wing propaganda. All he hears is fake news on Fox. All he hears is the Lindballs and the Hannitys and all of these mega rich megaphones. And he's got in his head that, well, you know, it's people who think that are the problem. And you look at this Occupy Wall Street thing. Some of the polls that are coming out, the more people are finding out what they're talking about and the conversation swaying in their direction, the more people are going, you know, I support it. That's going to continue. Now, the right, they're going to put up every fight back. They're going to do everything they can possibly do to discredit, make up. They're going to find every little story, and they're going to blow it out of proportion. Look, what happened yesterday in Oakland was an amazing event. Thousands of people came to the streets and said, you know what, we stand in solidarity with working people. They shut down the port of Oakland and said, you know what, we don't need this cheap plastic crap from China. And then you had a couple of knuckleheads who did some dumb stuff. Like you have in any of these things. You have a couple of knuckleheads. And that's what they're going to focus on. And they're going to try and convince guys like this guy who went to this meeting specifically to have his voice heard to that woman. They're going to convince him that those people out in the streets are against his best interest. But he's been out of work for over a year. And yet, like the state of Michigan and other places who want to means test people who get food stamps. Do you have money in the bank? Do you have a vehicle worth more than $15,000? Well, then you should get a cheaper car. And you look at this report that just came out. Citizens for Tax Justice and the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, they examined 280 of the big Fortune 500 companies. They found 78 of them paid zero federal income tax in at least one of the last 3 years. 30 of these big conglomerates paid a negative tax rate in all 3 years. In fact, we paid them for the privilege of working for them, paid them here. So you look at these 280 corporations who received subsidies in excess of $223 billion just during the three-year plan period they were looking at. And you look at the fact that we keep hearing the radical right screaming about, oh, taxes are too high. We need to cut taxes. We need to cut taxes. 35%, highest in the world. Their effective rate, according to the folks at the Center for Tax Justice and Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, for these multinational 280 corporations, was about 18%. So that's about sort of around half of what they keep saying. The study pointed out that Wells Fargo, the big giant banker, they topped the list of corporations receiving handouts at nearly $18 billion. So while we're talking about cut, gut, and punish for you and me, they whistle through the tulips. While we're talking about how we're going to cut Granny's Medicare, a company like Pepco Holding had a negative tax rate of 57%. A company like GE had a negative tax rate of 45%. Stop and think about that for a while. While we're struggling, they're doing just fine, thank you very much. And I was listening to the thing on C-SPAN today, the Republican Study Committee, talking about their jobs and their 15, forgotten 15. The reason that they're forgotten is that, for the most part, what they are is just doubling down on the same bad policy that got us into the mess that we're in now. More deregulation, more tax cuts for businesses, more drill, baby, drill. And I'm not against energy exploration. You just do it in the right way. Nobody's saying don't drill. Just do it smart. You know, make sure that you invest in the things that will make sure that you don't have a blowout. Had they done that, maybe we wouldn't have had the spill in the Gulf. And this Occupy thing is waking people up. And I look at Harvard University. Yesterday, they walked out of a Bush-era administrator's class. This Greg Mankiw. He was in the Bush administration. He was chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. They walked out of his class and then wrote him a letter accusing him of pushing a biased view of economics that perpetuate inequality. They wrote, quote, as Harvard undergraduates, we enrolled in Economics 10, hoping to gain a broad and introductory foundation of economic theory. Instead, we found a course that espouses a specific and limited view of economics that we believe perpetuates problematic and inefficient systems of economic inequality in our society today. They went on to say that Harvard graduates play major roles in the financial institutions and in shaping public policy around the world. If Harvard fails to equip its students with a broad and critical understanding of economics, their actions are likely to harm the global financial system. And you know what? They're right. I mean, you look at all these people in positions of power. Where'd they come from? Places like Harvard, places like the Chicago School of Business, places where the Koch brothers have had a nice in with putting their kind of people, like Greg Mankiw, who teach this their version of economics. Not on how do we all prosper, but how do a few prosper? The few elite who sit in their classes, how do they prosper? You know, I've said lawyers are one thing. You know, a lot of people say that, well, we'd be good without lawyers. We'd be a lot better off without MBAs. Because maybe our hospitals would run to heal people instead of to make profit. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Lou Prince about why we need the Buffett rule and these 280 companies who, well, we seem to be paying a good portion of them to be here. Back after this. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. Occupy Oakland's general strike drew thousands of supporters in a day of action Wednesday that included rallies and a march in the port of Oakland with the intent of shutting it down. Port Director Omar Benjamin said the port was effectively shut down by the general strike. Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan called for minimal police presence and said the city of Oakland is progressive and supports the goals of the Occupy Wall Street movement. She said she was working with the Oakland police chief to ensure that general strikers got their message across without the conflict that marred last week's events. She referred to the police attack on the Occupy Oakland protest that hospitalized Iraq War vet Scott Olson with a skull fracture. The Oakland Education Association is among the unions that supported the Oakland general strike. OEA President Betty Olson Jones.
Must be over 10,000 now. Incredible energy. It's just a huge range of ages, from little tiny kids to grandmothers carrying signs, every ethnicity you can imagine. It's just been beautiful. There's a real spark from Madison that helps to ignite a lot of this, and it's just very exciting to see that it's catching cold throughout the country.
Some Oakland businesses put up signs saying they were closed during the general strike, and Oakland's Grand Lake Movie Theater replaced its usual movie marquee with this message: "We proudly support the Occupy Wall Street movement, closed Wednesday to support the strike."
Know that you are part of the 99%. It's important that our students see this historic moment and that they participate in whatever way that they can. Everybody across the country needs to understand there is such a connection between the banks and the corporations being bailed out and what's happening to education and social services throughout this country. It's not right. It needs to change.
Due to alleged company misconduct, the UFCW may get another union election at a New York Target store. Jesse Russell reports.
The National Labor Relations Board has reviewed new evidence that suggests the corporation may have used the threat of store closure to intimidate employees into voting against representation by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The UFCW has been billing a case that the retailer violated labor laws at a Valley Stream Long Island location leading up to the vote. Other allegations include management interrogating workers thought to be organizing and illegal surveillance. If the allegations prove to have merit, the NLRB could schedule a second election. The union is also seeking more information on an employee they say was fired for union activity. That complaint had previously been withdrawn due to a lack of evidence. Target doesn't currently have any unionized stores, but the UFCW has active campaigns and nearly a dozen in New York.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to the website and download our podcast, or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. You know, and talking about the numbers of these big multinational corporations that we're handing money to, actually having a negative tax rate. We're paying them to be here. And then you hear the Republicans whining on about, oh, our tax rates are too high. And I agree, for small business people like me and others, the tax rate is too high. Maybe you help them out, and maybe that's how you grow the economy, but you know, that's not where they're going. They need to make sure ExxonMobil keeps their subsidies. They need to make sure that GE keeps lining their pockets as well. That's why I've asked Lou Prince, he's the owner of Vintage Vinyl out in St. Louis, Missouri, to come talk to us about this idea of a Buffett tax. Lou, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, how you doing, man? Good to hear from you.
It's good to hear from you again. You know, it's always great having you on the program. I look at these couple of groups, Business for Shared Prosperity, the Main Street Alliance, the American Sustainable Business Council came out released a report with Citizens for Tax Justice that we just talked about. All these companies, multinationals, who seem to be walking away from paying taxes. But you and me, man, we're the ones that are paying.
We're paying, and as a fellow job creator, I'm bummed and I'm angry. I hate it that these guys get away with using the infrastructure that we built and don't pay for it, that they get away with employing, to the extent that they do employ them, workers that we paid to train in public schools, and they don't pay anything for it. The really sick thing are the ones that are making their money off the government.
Yep.
I mean, you know, Boeing got $35 billion in government contracts last year and paid no taxes.
And they're doing everything they can do to abuse workers' rights.
Yeah, they're trying to take away workers' rights to negotiate. They're trying to take away workers' rights to organize. In Missouri, the five most important things the Republicans said were on their agenda in the legislature this year was right to work. And luckily, we were able to keep it from even coming up. But they had promised the lobbyists at the Chamber of Commerce that they would make it the top of their agenda.
Working people
got organized in this state, and we got it pulled, basically.
Let me ask you, I keep hearing people from the International Chamber of Commerce, which I keep saying, I believe they're almost a terrorist organization.
Well, they're not working for us.
They're definitely not. They're working for these big multinationals to get them to move overseas. But, you think about the Chamber of Commerce, and you want to think of your local guy who's helping people like you build small businesses. And every time I hear a small business person defend unions, I go, why? Why would you care if there was a union, if people had decent wages? Why would you care about that?
Well, that's just it. I want my customers to make a decent living. One of the things that I'm going to be working on in Missouri next year with Businesses for Shared Prosperity is raising the minimum wage again. We got it raised to $7.50 last year, and we're trying to get it up to $8.25 come next election. And it's because basically, the health of the economy depends on the ability of people to manage, to have enough money that they can manage their lives, that they can, with a clear conscience, spend a little bit extra to have a little bit better life, that they can spend a little bit extra to get a little better education for their kids, that they can spend a little bit extra for a restful vacation instead of worrying about their money.
And
people can't afford it. I don't remember, the last time I had to take some serious time off, and I think a lot of the people who work for me look at their families and go, my uncle, who's older than me, can't take a week or two vacation a year because he can't afford to go anywhere.
And that's horrible.
And union jobs provide that, and higher minimum wages provide that. They're the sort of bottom rung of providing that. There's lots more we need to do.
Absolutely. But when the way you lay that out, I go back to the old, to the textile strike up in Lawrence, Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
The bread and roses strike, where the philosophy was bread, yes, but roses too.
Roses
we want enough to sustain, but we also want some of a couple of the nicer things. Be able to take a day off, be able to buy roses for your wife, or be able to go to a movie, or buy a CD or an album or whatever that, like, you sell at Vintage Vinyl.
Working and living from paycheck to paycheck is a form of indentured servitude. It's feudalism. It's exactly what it is, or sharecropping, which was the feudalism in America. It's the same thing. And they're trying to take us back there, man. They really are.
Well, they want us to go back to the 90s, the 1890s.
Yeah, exactly. Or worse.
Yeah, but here's the thing. All I keep hearing out of the Republicans is we need to deregulate. We need to do all the things that got us into this mess. More deregulation,
really,
more tax cuts, more free trade agreements, all the stuff that got us into the mess we're in.
You're a small business owner. Do regulations really affect you much?
Not so much.
And I am actually over the federal regulation limit. I have more than 20 employees, and we went over that line. We crossed that line in the mid-80s. And essentially, outside of having to put together a company handbook so my employees knew the rules, it really hasn't affected me much either. Another small business organization, Small Business Majority, just did a survey on this. And basically they asked thousands of small businessmen, their members, what really bothered them the most. And on the list was regulation, and it came in like fifth, sixth, seventh. Fewer than a third even mentioned it. When the Republicans talk about regulation, you need to think of it as they're lobbyists trying to get rid of the rules that protect us, trying to get rid of the FDA, trying to get rid of OSHA, trying to get rid of occupational safety and health rules, trying to get rid of all of the regulation that makes products safe and that makes us safe and that protects working people.
Yeah, well, here in Pennsylvania, it's getting rid of the air quality and the water quality rules because we need to drill, baby, drill.
Hey, you actually have presidential candidates saying, get rid of the EPA.
Yep.
I mean, what are they thinking? You know, I can tell you, I've been in countries that don't have an EPA. Countries like China. I was in China in 1985 in rural China. So we're talking 30 years ago. And then, when the country wasn't industrialized like it is now, there was no drinkable water in any river or lake in that country. Yep. And there still isn't. There was no breathable air, even in the rural areas.
Yeah, we're going to fight wars over water in the coming years.
Oh, yeah.
So, when I hear this argument about deregulation in the rural, Lou, I keep hearing it. I've been hearing it since I was a kid. Reagan brought it in, and maybe a little bit before, but he was the guy who put his foot down on the pedal. I don't know if we've gotten any rid of any regulations. What I see it as is not deregulation, is re-regulation, changing the rules that used to help you and me, small business owners, to helping the big multinationals to crush us.
I can tell you what they did deregulate, which is the banking industry, and you see the results. You see the results in the banking industry. You know, if you'll notice, nobody seems to point out that our next-door neighbor, Canada, didn't have a big crash. Our next-door neighbor, Canada, their money is growing in value when ours is shrinking. Our next-door neighbor, Canada, has national health care, and you know why? They have the banking. They didn't have the crash we had.
Oh, socialists!
They
socialist.
Had the banking regulations we used to have.
Socialists! Socialist whore! Socialist!
I think you could find that in the, you know, socialist rags like the Wall Street Journal. Would even admit it.
Absolutely. But, you know, anytime you talk like that, you get a reaction from people who've never heard anything other than what they're spoon-fed by the radical right who seem to own the corporate-controlled for-profit media.
Speaking of the radical right controlling the media, one of the companies that didn't pay any taxes in America last year was Rupert Murdoch's News Corp. And Rupert uses like 180 different shell corporations offshore to move his money through, so he doesn't pay the U.S. government a penny.
Do you blame him?
You know, if those are the rules, he's playing by the rules.
Yep.
But the problem is the rules are written in a corrupt system by lobbyists in conjunction with the bought and paid for politicians.
I'm right there with you. And at the end of the day, shame on us for electing politicians who keep feeding us the same line of bull.
Just today, your Senator Toomey was one of the guys that blocked the infrastructure jobs bill from coming up in the Senate. So it starts at home. We all have to do the job in our state. You know, out there in Pennsylvania, you got plenty of work to do. I mean, he's got another, 4 years?
Yeah.
But we have to give the Democrats at least a chance in Congress. If you look at what Obama's been able to do with foreign policy, you can see, I mean, he hasn't pushed it enough domestically for me, but you can see that he can get things done, that he's intelligent and efficient when he has real control. And this Congress, he's never had any control in.
So, and looking at this report that just came out, I think it's a perfect timing given what's going on around the country where people are finally, and I've been calling for this for 6 years now, you know, people coming out in the streets, the faceless, the voiceless, to find their voice and come out of the shadows. We're seeing people now finally doing that. This report, I think, is more ammunition for the fact that the 1% is killing us.
Yes. And I love it that it's finally been put at 99%. Versus 1%. You know, it's our fathers, our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents who built this country, who built the infrastructure that allows these people to make all this money, that created the foundation that they're all building on, and they're not willing to modernize and support that foundation. You know, if we just put the country to work doing what we need for our next generation, you know, I got two kids in college, and I want them to grow up in a country with clean air and clean water and renewable energy and universal broadband and things like health care. And I think we all do.
Absolutely.
And someone's going to have to pay for it, and the people who do the best have to pay the most. It's the way it's always been. Corporate tax revenues as a part of GDP in this country are the lowest they have been since 1950. And of the 32 largest Western economies, we are 31st. 31st meaning next to lowest.
Right.
And the percentage of GDP that corporations pay in taxes. The only country where they pay less taxes than we do is Iceland, and they're doing great, aren't they?
That's what I've heard. Oh, yeah, they're fantastic. But here's my problem. I mean, I keep hearing the radical right who have the megaphone because they're funded by the mega rich, and they keep telling people we're broke, we can't afford bridges and we can't afford roads. Oh, we would love to educate your children.
There's a difference between being broke and being cheap. Okay, America isn't broke. There's plenty of money out there. We're just not collecting it in taxes. One of the right's great tricks really is to defund the IRS. One of the most recent bills in Congress. One of the most recent tax bills is this new camp bill. One of the things it would do is take about $600 million out of the IRS budget so that the IRS can't, you know, it's easy for the IRS to go after small businesses and individuals because they haven't got fancy lawyers.
Right.
And they haven't got, you know, fancy accounting companies who can basically stall them. So the IRS is forced to go after who it can get as opposed to spend millions of dollars and end up with nothing. And, you know, as much as we all dislike the tax man, He's the referee in this, and if the rules are going to be enforced, it's going to cost something. Any form of regulation costs something, but it also creates jobs.
Absolutely. You know, here's the thing. You brought up the tax man, and you look at Greece, and the thing that you haven't heard about Greece is Greece did exactly what you just mentioned. They stopped going after the very wealthy. They stopped going after the people who could pay the taxes, and they just let them go. And they just decided to borrow instead of enforcing the rules that they had. And look at the mess they're in. So if there are folks out there who want to say, well, if we keep borrowing, we're going to end up like Greece. I say if we stop collecting taxes like they did in Greece, we're going to end up like Greece.
It is exactly the situation. And, in fact, as a business person, you know and I know that now is the time to borrow.
It's cheap.
That the effective interest rate that the U.S. is paying on most of its debt is 1.3%. Now, if inflation is 2%, that means it's costing us negative 0.7% for money that we reinvest. And when we reinvest that money in this country, we get roads and we get bridges and we get jobs. And we get people off welfare and we get people off food stamps and we get people off unemployment. We get taxes to improve the schools and teachers go back to work. We get taxes to, sales taxes and local taxes that put our cops back to work and our firemen back to work. These are taxes that work for us. And cutting these taxes is just destroying the future of the country and the future of our children. The Greeks are really seriously considering, in fact, getting out of the EU, getting out of the economic common market and going back to the drachma, their original currency, which would really screw a whole bunch of American banks, bluntly.
Yeah, Goldman Sachs being one of them.
Yeah.
Which, again, I guess we would have to bail out. So let me ask you.
Which is going to lead us with a real problem. If you noticed, Sarkozy today kept trying to get Obama to step up and say he'd help. And he said, I'm sure you boys are well equipped to handle your own problems.
Absolutely. Got enough on our own right now. But, you know, last line of questioning. I mean, if you know, what you're saying is true, and I fully believe it is, then what's the motivation for the Republicans to block every single movement? Because it seems to be predominantly the Republicans. A handful of Democrats are Trader Joe Lieberman, who used to be a Democrat, not sure what he is anymore.
He was one of the guys who blocked it today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand that. So what's the rationale? Is it just getting the black guy out of the White House, or is it some bizarre ideology that this country can only work if the wealthy control everything?
I don't think it's ideological. I think it's economic. I think these are people who believe that the route to staying in power and staying elected, which appears to be their main objective, is to have the most money. And this is what the lobbyists pay for. I think it's a fight not between capitalism and socialism, but between the corporate state as an ideology and the republic that the Constitution lays out as an ideology. The lobbyists who own the Republican Party lock, stock, and barrel are essentially lobbyists for corporate statism. And corporate statism is the new, how to put it, the new political system. If you take a look at it, these multinationals are essentially outside the law. They do what pirates used to do. They find the ports where there's no resistance, like the Cayman Islands.
Right.
You know, there's one building in the Cayman Islands that has, it's like a three-story building with like 10 rooms that is the the official address of almost 19,000 American corporations.
Yep. Well, just like here, you know, Pennsylvania, we've got Delaware right to our
right
to our east. We've got that those magical boxes over there that scrub all the profits from Pennsylvania through that magical portal known as Delaware, because we have this loophole that allows that to happen. And on the national level, we do that, as you said, the Cayman Islands. And now, thanks to the free trade agreement, Panama will be the next one.
Wow.
So good for us. Again, the website, vintagevinyl.com, our good friend Lou Prince. Always great talking with you. Always great having you on the program. We would love to have you back again real soon.
Anytime, man.
I appreciate it, brother. Thanks. Again, the website, vintagevinyl.com. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Lou Prince's name. It'll take you right there. Back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Many big-time newspapers have run mocking pieces by political pundits about the Occupy movement, denigrating it as confused and chaotic. In USA Today, for example, right-wing pundit Cal Thomas recently opined that, to the extent anyone can understand their core message, the occupiers apparently despise business and capitalism. Well, no, Cal. They despise corporate greed and political corruption, and their core message is really quite clear. The bankers, bosses, and others who make up the richest 1% of our society are further enriching themselves by knocking down the 99%. Maybe an up-close example of this would help Thomas see what the majority of Americans who support the Occupy movement are experiencing. Look no further than the very newspaper chain that's paying him to pontificate so cluelessly. Gannett, which owns USA Today and about 80 other papers, is a financial and journalistic wreck. In the past 6 years, its stock price has collapsed by 750%. It has fired 20,000 employees, stripped its newsrooms of their ability to do serious reporting, and cut the pay of remaining journalists while insisting that they work longer hours with less support. Craig DeBow, Gannett's CEO since 2005, presided over this debacle. He's now out, but he wasn't fired, as you and I would have been for such a failure. No, no. Instead, Gannett's board of directors handed DeBow, get this, $37 million as a go-away gift. This cushion of luxury came on top of the $16 million he was given in salary and bonuses during the past 2 years, as those workers who produced the product were being dumped and the corporation was tanking. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, Mr. Thomas, that's the reason so many are in the streets and in support of what the occupiers are saying. Can you relate?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Seems like things are kind of upside down. Choke you someone to turn around. Before he can do it again, this train's coming to town like a hurricane. Herman Cain, get on board, the hurricane.
Well, you know, from the day we started playing this song, I kept going, well, what did he do? What did he do? He's going to do it again? What is it? What did he do? Now we know. Now we know number three has come out. The sexual harassment thing, I think, can only grow. So now we know. Now we know. And the train thing, is that kind of subliminal? Maybe the songwriter knew. Maybe he had some premonition of the future. Good for him. The Borowitz Report has come out with a story. There was a new complication in the race for the White House today, as just released poll revealed that the majority of likely voters say that they too were sexually harassed by Herman Cain. According to the poll conducted by the University of Minnesota's Opinion Research Institute, 51% of voters strongly agreed with the statement, "I have been sexually harassed by Herman Cain," while an additional 24% agreed that Herman Cain is sexually harassing me right now. News of the poll hit just as Herman Cain accusers gathered for a march on Washington. Estimated numbers in the 999,999 range. Asked about the size of the Washington gathering, Mr. Cain said he did not remember harassing so many women, but added, "Well, I've never been very good with numbers." Even as the controversy swirled about Mr. Cain, he received a stirring vote of confidence from a prominent world leader. Italy's Silvio Berlusconi said, "Hey, a man's sex life should not affect his right to hold the power." There you go, Silvio. Very nice. And here's the thing. You know, I agree. I don't think, you know, someone's sex life should have anything really to do with their ability to hold power. But this isn't really about sex. This is about the abuse of power. This is about someone being in a position of authority, attempting to coerce, attempting to persuade an underling. And I find it interesting that the radical right has really done a amazing job of coming out in defense of Herman. Limbaugh said, "Well, a political tool of the left is to get rid of people, and it scores money gains." Americans for Herman Cain blasted out a fundraising email that was a headline, "Don't let the media lynch another black conservative." You know, not afraid to use that race card. Not at all. Because after all, you know,
that's why our blacks are so much better than their blacks.
Yeah, there you go, Ann Coulter. And look, you know, the reality is the University of Michigan just came out with a study not too long ago. And that study found that 9 out of 10 women will experience offensive sexist remarks or being told that they could not do their job properly due to their sex. 1 in 10, and this is what kind of struck me, 1 in 10 said in the workplace at some point during their career, someone like Herman, someone in a prominent position, supervisor, promised a promotion or better treatment if they were sexually cooperative, was I think the word that they used. And you look at this, and to me, I got to be honest, you take this stuff seriously. And I want to know. I think the Restaurant Association will probably bail them out, falling back on their, you know, their right to legal privacy. But the reality is you've got very powerful people who are lining up against women. I look at Robert Bork. You remember the guy that failed Supreme Court justice back during the Reagan years, who's now one of Romney's future Republican presidential candidate, Romney's one of his top legal advisors, who recently claimed that women aren't discriminated against anymore. That's something we used to do back in the old days. The broads don't put up with it no more. You believe that? I mean, you know, amazing. So Herman Cain gave an exclusive, and I find it hysterical that he gave the exclusive interview to Clarence Thomas's wife. Because they keep throwing Clarence Thomas back up, because after all, when you're talking about a black man harassing women, why not throw Clarence out there? Because maybe then you'll drum up Arlen Specter going, "Well, maybe were you fantasizing?" He gave the exclusive interview to the Daily Caller's Ginny Thomas, who of course is the wife of Clarence. And again, you know, I look at this and I go, you know, how'd she get that gig? Pretty high paying gig, with the Koch brothers people. Well, I don't know. Anyway, Rick Perry in the news as well, denying he's on any type of medication. He had some spinal surgery not too long ago. So, you know, there's some maybe reports where, hey, you know, I had taken some drugs, you know, a little loopy maybe. To me, that would have been a good out. See, I acted kind of weird. Maybe it was the, you know, I took some little pain medication because my back was hurting me, something. Because that speech, wow, way out on the deep end. But anyway, I don't think we're going to hear the last of the Cain scandal. In fact, I think it's pretty much he has handled this in the worst possible way because he's allowed it to blow up and to be a big story. Had he come out and say, you know what, I made a mistake. I said some things that probably were inappropriate, and I'm sorry for it. It had gone away. I truly believe that. But he had to take the "I did not have sex with that woman" position, and I think it's gonna skewer him. We're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk with Eric Loomis, professor at the University of Rhode Island, about this what was going on yesterday in Oakland, and talk about general strikes in general. Stick around. Right back with Eric Loomis.
Just make us be brave, make us play nice, let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. 2561.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Instead of talking about how to safeguard the pensions of Americans who've retired or are about to retire, the Education Workforce Committee is going to conduct yet another witch hunt designed to prove somehow that the National Labor Relations Board is part of some vast Trotskyite conspiracy to kill jobs in the American workforce. The fact of the matter is, what's killing jobs in the American labor market is the inaction, inattention, and ineptitude of the Republican majority.
Boy, that isn't the truth. That's why I like Rob Andrews, congressman from New Jersey. Good, solid labor guy. That's why I like him. Because the reality is, look, the Republicans, they're doing everything they can do to make this economy look bad so that the next election, in their opinion, is going to go their way. But I think most people are waking up to the fact is they're the roadblock to any progress. And I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion. Anyway, last night we had Susie Cagle on the program. Turns out she got arrested after she was on the program. She tweeted earlier, charged with misdemeanor, present at raid, arraignment not for a month. Seems like a scare tactic to make me stop reporting. Well, that might be what's going on out there in Oakland. But I still think it was a great thing that happened yesterday. I think the show of solidarity, the show of people getting out of the streets, a great thing. And what have general strikes done over the history of their country? How many have we had? That's why I've asked Eric Loomis. He's an assistant professor of history at the University of Rhode Island. He's written a great piece called Shutting It All Down, The Power of General Strikes in U.S. History. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Professor Loomis's name. Professor, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, Hank, I'm really glad to be here.
I look at what happened yesterday in Oakland, and, you know, the right was saying it was a failure. I think it was a rousing success. When you have that many people out in the streets, you shut the port down. I think it's a positive.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time since you had an action like this, and you know, it's hard to say where it's going to lead, certainly it's a really really important step, and you know, I think that a lot depends on what comes next, but I think that it's, you know, it's changed the narrative of economic issues in this country, and you know, it's clearly been a very positive thing.
You know, general strikes, not something that we think about here in the U.S. very often. That's generally something you think about France or Belgium or somewhere in Europe, because I think there they have a little bit different class consciousness than we have here in the U.S. But still, when you can get, I saw reports up to 20,000 people out in the streets, I think that's a pretty good event.
Yeah, it's an impressive achievement. I mean, you know, the general strike is very rarely used in American history. I mean, there's only been three or four that have really gotten off the ground before this. And so this is, you know, this is one of, you would have to say, one of the top five successful general strikes in American history. It's a very difficult tactic. I think you're right that, you know, in Europe there's a greater sense of class consciousness. And of course, it's hard in the United States because of legal restrictions against unions joining in sympathy strikes.
All right. So you look back and you go, the Republicans are talking. Rob Andrews' statement during our opening that the Republicans want to, you know, defund and get rid of portions of the NLRB. I'm sure they don't want to get rid of the parts that restrict us from sympathy strikes and restrict us from doing certain actions. You know, in fact, the folks in out in Oakland, many of the unions could have gotten in trouble for participating.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the key law here is the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947, the most insidious anti-labor act in American history, that essentially made it very, very difficult for unions to operate in any kind of class solidarity. And then among its specific provisions is making it illegal for unions to engage in a sympathy strike, meaning going out on strike in support of another union, which, of course, is what a general strike is.
You know, there's part of me, the labor history part of me that, you know, I guess you can romanticize the days when we had millions of people on strike and people fighting and, you know, saying, hey, we're not going to put up with this poor treatment anymore. You know, going back to the days of, let's get into the streets and solve this, being okay, go ahead, take the labor relations board away. Or like in Ohio, for instance, taking collective bargaining rights away. What most people don't understand about Ohio is before they had collective bargaining rights, Ohio had the most strikes in the country of public workers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we're entering a phase in American history where all of the protections that have been gained over the last century are being rolled back. And because of that, because the middle class is going away and because you're seeing a rise in poverty and a rise in desperateness, people are going to revive the tactics that, you know, weren't really necessary in the 50s and the 60s and into the 70s when people were, you know, when working class people were increasingly part of the American dream instead of being shut out from the American dream. And so, you know, not surprisingly, old tactics are becoming much more relevant again.
Yeah. You know, yesterday was Free Speech Day because yesterday, I think it was in Seattle, or in Spokane, they had 150 people arrested back in 1909 because of the free speech fights that were going out there. And it's tied into all of this stuff. And it's amazing how, if you look back to history, the same themes keep coming around, the same inequality, the same divisions being put in, the same, you know, I go back to Jay Gould. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half, where you've got, you know, National Guard or police or militia against the workers and the people. It's the same thing.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, you know, you hit a really important point there, is that, you know, that police are working class people too. You know, they come from working class backgrounds for the most part. They're not making that much money. And it's always been an interesting a challenge for labor movements to create solidarity with police because, you know, of the culture that is promoted among governments to use police against working class people, and so, you know, it's that division has always been there, and it's always been very difficult to overcome. And you see it, and you see it with some of the behavior that was happening in Oakland late last night with the violence against the protesters.
Yeah, you know, when we were in Wisconsin back in February, I got to be honest, there was a massive police presence. But when you took the time and you talked to each one of those cops, and I talked to a bunch of them. They didn't want things to go wrong. The people who were in charge of the police department said, you know, as long as nothing happens, we're not doing anything crazy. And there was a good relationship there. I'm under the impression, and with Oakland being the epicenter of this right now, they've had some problems over the years, in the community and the police force that I think is a bigger part of it as well.
Well, no, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, Oakland, you know, Oakland always has had a history going back a long time of violent police. I mean, certainly that was one of the centers of the Black Panther Party in the 1960s, where you had the assassination of Black Panther leaders, and police violence has been an issue generally toward communities of color. The Occupy Oakland movement tends to be relatively white, for various reasons. So it's a different kind of constituency, different kind of group, but that history is strong in Oakland. The other thing you have in the Bay Area is a larger concentration of committed anarchists, which is a very small part of the Occupy Oakland group. But nonetheless, you know, that those relations can be pretty strained, and tension between those small groups of anarchists and the police can rise fairly quickly, which is I think a problem that they're having to face now.
Well, like I said, you know, in any of these large groups where you have, in that case, 20,000 people, you're going to get a couple of a-holes who are going to cause trouble, are going to do dumb things that are going to grab the attention and heighten the alert level of the people who are supposed to be there doing their job.
Yeah, no, and I think that's what's happening. And of course, the other issue is you know, maybe some of the people causing a few problems are anarchists, but maybe they're provocateurs as well, which has always been a tactic that companies and police have used within labor movements, is to infiltrate them with provocateurs to create violent situations so that they can then crack down. And so, I mean, you know, you've seen that in an action that Occupy DC did a few weeks ago, where you had a right wing blogger choose to become an agent and then brag about it after he got pepper sprayed invading one of the museums. And so, you know, these people could easily be right wingers who want to give this movement a bad name.
Yeah, because they think they're gonna be the next James O'Keefe or one of those people who Breitbart's gonna make a star out of. Because there's
that's
so much
exactly
money
right.
over there.
And you know, then the media feeds off this. So that's a big problem.
What I love is that, you know, if you remember back during the Wisconsin thing, this guy, Ian Murphy, made the phony phone call to Scott Walker. How he got through, I don't know, but brought that up.
Right.
Said, hey, we could send in some troublemakers. And when you had a sitting governor go, well, you know, we thought about that, but we decided to do something else first. And I've been taking the position that that's what sparked that whole thing in Wisconsin. Those kids get labor history in that state. Very few states get that.
Yeah. No, I mean, certainly in Wisconsin, as well as in California. I mean, you have, you know, I mean, one of the biggest general strikes in American history, as I wrote about in that article, was in Oakland in 1946, where you had, the streets were absolutely occupied by workers for a couple of days. And one of the other large strike and general strikes in American history was in San Francisco in 1934. So, you know, I think like in Wisconsin, it's not surprising that you would have a center of resistance to the problems of our nation right now in the Bay Area. I mean, these places have history and people remember that history.
Yeah. The great thing is that we've now changed the discussion. And this is one of the things I give the occupation movement credit for. They've completely changed the discussion in this country. We are now actually talking about people being in the streets and being okay with it, and income inequality and worker rights and a whole plethora of things, good government stuff. And the way I see it, the difference between them and the Tea Party, because people want to draw lines, is the Tea Party wants to destroy things. These people actually want to use, from what I've read, the legislative process to have good government.
Right. I mean, two things come to mind there. I mean, one is that what is it? People talk about, you know, violence or whatever in the Occupy movement, but it was Tea Party members who will bring guns to rallies. You don't see guns at the Occupy rallies. I mean, these are peaceful people. You know, these are people who just had enough. And the other thing is that, you know, the Occupy movement, you're absolutely right. It's completely changed the way people are talking about these issues in this country. And it's really struck me as a history professor that you never know what's going to cause change to happen. You never know what event is going to create massive change. I mean, you know, you never would have guessed that four kids in 1960 sitting down at a lunch counter to desegregate in Greensboro, North Carolina would have sparked this enormous student-led part of the civil rights movement. But it did. Similarly, you know, when a couple months ago a few people started occupying Wall Street, who could have guessed that this would have changed the way people are talking about income inequality in America? But it has, and it is a huge success already.
Yeah, in fact, that lunch counter thing just this week in history. I mean, it was just the other day, back in, I think it was 1960 that happened, right? 64.
Yeah, 1960, yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing how, you know, you tie these things into what's going on. I'm struck by how things, they pretty much stay the same. It's just this constant cycle. And right now we're fine.
I think we've gone through a period where there was time when, you know, labor movement was less radical, and there were many reasons for that. But one of them is that people's incomes were growing. People were living a better life. People were able to send their children to college, right? People were able to buy a home, and that's going away. And now we're like getting back into a period where you have more poverty and the problems that come with poverty. And I'm really impressed by the level of fighting back that's happened this year, both in Wisconsin and in Ohio with the attempt to, almost certainly successful attempt to overturn SB5, in Oakland, in New York, and all over the country. It's been a great thing.
Absolutely. You know, I think just what you said there, I think of George Meany, who was the president of the AFL-CIO back during the 60s and 70s. And I remember him saying, you know, it's hard to get someone to go on strike when they're making $10,000 a year, which back then was a lot of money. You know, they were the victim of their own success. They had done so well for their members that, you know, they were, I guess, fat and happy, and they weren't willing to fight anymore. They got theirs. And now we're moving to a period where all that's being taken away.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, you know, that one of the lessons from, and maybe people will learn this in the future, but one of the lessons from that period where it seemed like everything was okay is that even in the 1950s and 60s, companies were not happy paying these kind of wages to workers. They were already looking for ways to undermine the labor victories of the 1930s and 40s, beginning to move plants to the South and then eventually to Mexico and overseas. And so, you know, that even no matter how, no matter what the level of successes that unions will achieve in the past and in the future, you know, I think you have to be on your guard constantly against the companies always looking to, you know, increase profits by cutting wages. And I think people are realizing that again.
Yeah, and as we move towards Right to Work Nation, if that's the, if we vote for Mitt Romney, he pledged it, Right to Work Nation, or any of the Snow White or the Seven Dwarfs, that's where they want to take us. Scary times ahead.
Yeah.
Again, great piece, Shutting It All Down, The Power of General Strikes in U.S. History. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Professor Eric Loomis's name. It'll take you right there. Professor, I appreciate the time. I'd love to have you back on.
Hey, thanks a lot. It was great to be here.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm on a Mexican radio. I'm on a Mexican
world radio. And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So Bernie Sanders was on with Keith Olbermann. And he was talking about the constitutional amendment that was introduced by Democratic Senators Tom Udall and Michael Bennett, saying, you know what, we need to get money out of politics. We need to put some controls on. We need to know who, for one, I would think. But we need to do something to overturn this Citizens United. And he said, I think what we're seeing now through the occupation movement and other efforts is a growing anger and frustration with the power of big money in this country. You're seeing it just the other day when people actually defeated the biggest financial institutions in America, Bank of America, who wanted to impose a $5 debit fee. We beat them. He says, I think right now, whether you're talking to a Republican or progressive, people are saying that the Supreme Court decision is basically insane. Nobody that I know thinks ExxonMobil is a person. And, you know, I've been saying this since the day it happened. In fact, I was saying, look, understand, Citizens United's coming. The Supreme Court's going to rule against we the people, going to rule for they the corporations. And they did. And here we are fighting this fight. Democrats wanted to bring the Disclose Act up. Republicans filibustered. They're happy with the status quo. And you look at this story from AFP. This election cycle could cost $6 billion. I mean, stop and think about the $6 billion. Last 2008, the presidential election, 2008, topped $1 billion for the first time in history. We are talking about $6 billion. Under the old laws that Citizens United shot down, if you wanted to donate to a candidate, the most you could donate during the primary was $2,500. The most you could donate during the general election was $2,500. That's it. $2,500. Citizens United, there's no limit. I want to give the Koch brothers want to give $1 billion. $1 billion. And you know what? We don't get to know that they did it. You look at these big super PACs that are springing up. They can raise unlimited amounts of cash. And we don't get to know who's funding them. I mean, it's basically the wild, wild west. And you look at one of the big super PACs that are out there, the Crossroads GPS. That's Karl Rove's group. They're going to raise hundreds of millions of dollars. And we don't get to know who's funding it. But we'll see their ads. You look at Americans for Prosperity, we'll see their ads. And the Koch brothers, you gotta love the honesty by the Romney campaign. They put out a memo not too long ago that acknowledged the fact that the Koch brothers are the financial engine of the Tea Party. Duh. Did we not already know that? They fund Americans for Prosperity, they fund FreedomWorks too, and a whole bunch of other ones. So the money that's in this system, that's what's keeping policy from going our way. And I think Lou Prince is right. The lobbyists are telling these Republicans, well, we need to do this. Even though they got to know it's not going to help us. They got to know it's not going to turn this country around, but it's their political, it's their political ideology, it's their political will, it's their future, actually. Because they got cushy gigs. You know, ask these Tea Party guys, pretty cushy gig, $175,000 a year. Ask Joe Walsh, the guy who owes his wife over $100,000 in back child support, if that $175,000 a year with health care, not a bad gig. And they're going to do the bidding of whoever puts money in their coffers. And right now, the money's going into, hey, we need to go back to oil. Because I'm telling you, 2012 could be 1980 over again, because the Republicans are doing everything they can possibly think of to kill alternative energy. And at the heart of it is this Solyndra company. Look, was it a bad business model? Most certainly. But if you look at all of the companies that they invested in, it was a step in the right direction. Now, would I have done it differently? Yes. I would have had the demand. I would have said, you know what, as the federal government, we're going to buy things. We're going to get off electricity. Every federal building in 20 years is going to be completely energy independent. That's what I would have done. And where are you in the free market? You raise the capital and you provide the supply. I've got the demand, you supply the supply. They did a little differently. They said, hey, okay, we're going to put up a little money to help get it off the ground, this fledgling industry, which we do need. We need a push. But now what you're seeing is you're seeing the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee, the ISA people, ISA hole. Now they're subpoenaing in the White House. They want internal documents. They want internal correspondence. They want more detail. Now, understand, the White House has handed over, according to Bloomberg, or according to USA Today, 85,000 documents. 85,000 documents. They said they would hand over voluntary emails. They would hand over other documents that are narrowed to the scope of what the investigation is. Look, we'll give you whatever you want, but we're not going to give you everything so you can go on some wild goose chase. We don't have that kind of time. There are other things that need to be done. There are jobs that need to be created, but understand, it's about playing the clock. It's about stall. It's about delay. They got the lead right now, so it's about holding the ball. And they're going to do whatever it is they can do to make sure that this Solyndra thing is what people think of when they think of solar energy. And I'm telling you, I'm thrilled to death with my solar panels. Cut my energy production, cut my energy consumption by 40%. Thrilled with it. In fact, we should be doing more of it. But the big oil and gas people, people like the Koch brothers, who fund Americans for Prosperity, who's spending almost $2.5 million on an ad buy to remind people about Solyndra. They're putting out these 60-second ads telling, oh, well, you know, you need to know. And here's the reality. Yeah, did they fail? Yeah. How many companies do? I was listening to the C-SPAN today. 9 out of 10 companies fail. According to the Republicans, this is their numbers. So we've had a couple in the solar industry. Hundreds have sprung up. Hundreds have gotten a little bit of help to get moving. Is that the reason to walk away from all of it? Because that's what the Republicans want you to believe. That, oh, we just can't do it. We need to walk away from that alternative stuff. We just drill. We need more drill, baby, drill. And look, I'm in favor of energy production. I want to be energy independent, but I also want to be smart about it. And that's something the radical right never talks about. It's all about, hey, how much can we suck out of the ground? Hey, how much can we profit? Nor am I against profit. But if you look at the oil companies, look at how much they've stuffed into their pockets and how much we give them. It's obscene. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about buying American. Todd Lipscomb is going to be here talking about madeintheusaforever.com. Stick around. We're right back after this.
Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Occupy Oakland's general strike drew thousands of supporters in a day of action Wednesday that included rallies and a march in the port of Oakland with the intent of shutting it down. Port Director Omar Benjamin said the port was effectively shut down by the general strike. Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan called for a minimal police presence and said the city of Oakland is progressive and supports the goals of the Occupy Wall Street movement. She said she was working with the Oakland police chief to ensure that general strikers got their message across without the conflict that marred last week's events. She referred to the police attack on the Occupy Oakland protest that hospitalized Iraq War vet Scott Olson with a skull fracture. The Oakland Education Association is among the unions that supported the Oakland general strike. OEA President Betty Olson Jones.
It must be over 10,000 now. Incredible energy. It's just a huge range of ages, from little tiny kids to grandmothers carrying signs, every ethnicity you can imagine. It's just been beautiful. There's a real arc from Madison that helps ignite a lot of this, and it's just very exciting to see that it's catching hold throughout the country.
Some Oakland businesses put up signs saying they were closed during the general strike, and Oakland's Grand Lake Movie Theater replaced its usual movie marquee with this message. We proudly support the Occupy Wall Street movement, closed Wednesday to support the strike.
Know that you are part of the 99%. It's important that our students see this historic moment and that they participate in whatever way that they can. Everybody across the country needs to understand there is such a connection between the banks and the corporations being bailed out and what's happening to education and social services throughout this country. It's not right. It needs to change.
Due to alleged company misconduct, the UFCW may get another union election at a New York Target store. Jesse Russell reports.
The National Labor Relations Board has reviewed new evidence that suggests the corporation may have used the threat of store closure to intimidate employees into voting against representation by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The UFCW has been building a case that the retailer violated labor laws at a Valley Stream Long Island location leading up to the vote. Other allegations include management interrogating workers thought to be organizing and illegal surveillance. If the allegations prove to have merit, then NLRB could schedule a second election. The union is also seeking more information on an employee they say was fired for union activity. That complaint had previously been withdrawn due to a lack of evidence. Target doesn't currently have any unionized stores, but the UFCW has active campaigns at nearly a dozen in New York.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich shit out of farm red. A bottle shirt that can't be on. Blue denim, hell is vain.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take the program wherever you go. You know, what we've been talking about for the longest time now is, you know, how do we get this economy moving? I've been saying for several years now, one of the best ways to get the economy moving is buying products made in our backyard. I'm a big fan of domestic production for domestic consumption, be that all around the world. We can trade products, yes, but I want people building things in their countries and consuming their own things. That's the only way we're going to truly rise all boats. But, you know, now that the economy's taking a downturn, I'm hearing more people going, hey, you may be right. We need to be buying American products. That's why I've asked Todd Lipscomb. He is the founder of MadeInUSAForever.com. He's also the author of a new book, Remade in the USA. You can get that at his website, MadeInUSAForever.com. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Todd Lipscomb's name. Todd, thanks for taking time for me.
Rick, it's great to be here tonight.
You know, as the economy is, you know, taking the downturn, I think most people have woken up to the fact the job that I could save by buying something made here could be my own.
Absolutely. Though the economy continues to worsen in many ways. You're absolutely right. I feel more and more energy, you know, month by month. You wouldn't believe the web traffic, the phone calls I get. It's growing all over, and it's every type of person. So I have hope now because of, you know, all these people and all these companies, small companies that we have on the website, they're still making stuff here in the States.
Let's talk about a couple of those things, because I think it's important that, you know, that people know, because, you know, we there's a frame, and I fall victim to it as well. You go into a place like Walmart or Target or any of these big box retailers, and you look on the shelves, and you know, I take my kids clothes shopping with a globe, so at least we get a geography lesson out of it, because no clothes seem to be made here anymore. What advice would you give for people, and what kind of things are still made here?
A lot more than people realize. Now, the electronics industry's pretty much been wiped out because, as I saw as a business executive in Asia for Western Digital, the governments of Tokyo and Beijing have made it a priority to dominate those industries, just like China's trying to dominate the green industries right now. So you'll hardly find any electronics to speak of. But there's almost everything you can imagine. They're still made by small family-owned businesses. The problem is these big box stores will not let them on the shelves. And it's just because of greed. I mean, they get a little bit better margin from bringing it over from Asia. So that's what they prefer, even if it means their own customers are losing their jobs. It's ridiculous, I know, but it's short-term greed at its finest.
Yeah, and that's the thing that gets me. You know, I know people who say, well, you know, times are a little tough, so I had to buy the Kia or the Hyundai.
Oh, yeah.
And I go, but what are you doing? I mean, overall, those create jobs here. Those people who have jobs here buy your product that you may be making, which keeps you employed.
Absolutely. Let me tell you a story about Kia and Hyundai, Rick. You know, I've been to Korea many, many times, and what the Korean government does to protect their industry is, for example, with these automobile companies, if a Korean buys an American car or German car or whatever in Korea, they're almost certain to be audited by the Korean IRS.
Yep.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? So that's not the truth here, though. I mean, of course, no one gets audited when they buy a Hyundai or something. So this recent Korean trade deal was, a disaster. Sure, it lowers duties, but it did nothing against these dirty tricks that they play. It's almost as if Washington doesn't understand the real game that's going on.
Yeah, well, there's part of me that thinks they do, but that their corporate masters are just funding them in the other direction. And I remember I had interviewed Senator Byron Dorgan on just this topic a couple years back when he wrote his book. And in his book, he had talked about, you know, automobiles going over there. And it was the Dodge Dakota, I think, was starting to sell because people could put tarps over it or put caps on it. And the government actually passed a law that you could no longer put tarps on anything or caps on any of the trucks, which just killed any sales there. So much to your point, they actively on a local level do everything they can do to make sure that that our products or any foreign products, which I guess I got to be honest, if I'm running a country, I want domestic consumption.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying the Koreans and the others are stupid. No, they're actually clever. You know, I admire them in some ways. And, of course, they're going to take advantage of the situation when, you know, Washington's just going to bend over and grab their ankles. It's really unfortunate. But we ultimately, as consumers, have the power because we choose, you know, we vote USA or we vote Korea or China every day with every purchase. And we can make a huge difference with just a small change in behavior. often you can find American-made products at smaller local businesses instead of these big chain stores, for example. Or look around. Some chains like Menards will carry a lot more American products than others. But I don't have a lot of hope for the Kmarts and Walmarts, to be honest. There are quite a few website resources, though, I have to say, like my own. And even if you don't buy stuff on these resources, you can use it as a mechanism to research and see what's out there and what the prices are and maybe find a better deal somewhere else.
Right. And again, the website is madeinusaforever.com. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Todd Lipscomb's name. He's the founder of madeinusaforever.com and also the author of a new book, Remade in the USA. You can get it there at his website. Remade, why the title?
You know, it's about renewal, about a phoenix rising again, in my opinion. You know, I saw this going on in Asia when I was working over there, and I came back, and I just was horrified by what I realized was going on, that, for example, China intends to be the next superpower, and they're sucking our factories out, and they're winning this political struggle without ever firing a shot. But we can do something about it. We can rise again. Nobody gets to decide the United States' future other than us. You know, it's not up to China. It's up to the USA and ourselves. It's time to lock arms and make some just modest behavior changes. You know, Rick, I'll tell you, too, the quality of these American-made products, especially by these small businesses, is often great. So, yes, it might be a little bit cheaper at Walmart, but they want you to get a new one every year with the planned obsolescence,
yep.
Or even quicker, where this American-made stuff is lasting 5 or 10 years like it's supposed to.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, we keep talking about natural resources. We keep talking about how Americans are depleting natural resources. In fact, I just read something recently that I think it was Australia, the United States, Japan, are 20% of the nation's or the world's population. Yet we consume something like 80%. Of the natural resources. And, you know, it's because of this, we buy cheap things because it makes us feel good. We get a whole basket of cheap plastic crap from China at the Walmart. We take it home, it breaks, we throw it away, and we go back and buy it again. It's, you know, kind of like this Pavlovian exercise that we go through.
It's just pathetic, isn't it? And also, you know, with the environment, I mean, we control it here. I saw firsthand, especially in China, just the pollution spewing everywhere. It was no wonder the lead paint got into those toys. 83 million toys were recalled 4 years ago. And there's a lot more going on than people realize with that sort of thing. And who do you sue in the end? But if we make it here, and there's a problem like that, people can go to jail. The government forces them to do it right. Or there's consequences. There's no consequences when Walmart buys stuff from China.
Yeah, excellent point. And you know the whole talk about deregulation and we need to be more business friendly. And I don't know that I want to be all that business friendly. I look at what's going on in our history, and I look at what's going on in places like China and India. I don't know that I want to go back there.
Oh, you know, China. You know, they call themselves communists, Rick, but they're not communists at all. I mean, it's a police state and. People are afraid to talk about politics or religion or whatever. They can talk about money and they can talk about sports a little bit, as long as they're, you know, nationalistic about it and, you know, girls maybe. But if it's anything important, they just start looking around nervous because, again, they never know who's spying on them. You know, the Chinese actually spend more on their internal police than they do on this military expenditures that everyone's worried about. It's more like the national socialism that Germany had, you know, in the 30s and early 40s than it is about communism.
Right. And at the end of the day, how can the world have a cheap manufacturing base if people start going, gee, you know, I'd like to join a union and maybe, be able to buy some of the things that I'm making.
Oh, absolutely. We already see riots and stuff. And, you know, there's so many accidents in the factories and in the mines in China that, eventually, I think the people are going to, you know, make some changes happen themselves, but they have a long, long road to travel before that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's like the Middle Ages never ended there. I mean, yes, they're building new towers and building new roads and stuff, but, I mean, if you're in a factory in China and you lose a few fingers, you're just fired. There's no, you know, safety net of any sort.
Yeah, there's no workman's comp. There's no, there's none of that stuff. It's, hey, it was nice knowing you. Good luck.
Yes.
See you later there, fingers. Sad stuff. So as the holidays are coming up, we're coming into the holiday season, I don't know if you've seen it, but in a lot of the big box stores, Christmas decorations already out and have been out for some time. What advice would you give to people who want to be conscious? They want to go, hey, I want to help support the country, but I want to give a great gift. Ideas, thoughts?
Again, there's so much out there, and if you don't know their size, we introduced some really cool gift certificates too, but you don't have to do it with us. You can look around and, if you really want to buy American, you can think about services in your own community too and buy gift certificates that way, like for haircuts or a beauty salon or a massage for your wife or something like that, and so on and so on, where an American's actually having to do something. But we've got to make this holiday, I think, a patriotic holiday too, and not just a massive consume China junk holiday. We're borrowing trillions of our own dollars back from China and these other nations, and it's ridiculous. If we just keep that money here circulating in a virtuous circle. When somebody buys, for example, a pair of blue jeans from me, Rick, and what could be more American than that, except if you buy Levi's anymore, right?
Except we don't make them here anymore, but
yes,
for the most part.
But anyway, if you buy a pair of blue jeans that are made here in the States, that farmers paid for the cotton, the trucker took it to the mill wove it, and so on and so on. It touches so many lives.
Yep.
People are off the unemployment line. They're feeding their kids. And so on, and that's what we need to, I think, make this holiday. Yeah, just do a little research. Spend 5 more minutes. Don't go out in the snow. Just get on the computer.
There you go.
And get some ideas and see.
Yep.
So, why not? Give it a try. That's
fact,
what I would say.
A good place to go would be madeinusaforever.com. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Todd, great talking with you. I'd love to have you back on again. You can plug this again and make sure that folks know that there are products out there that are made right here at home. I appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick. And thank you for all you're doing for us and our people. It's amazing.
All right. I appreciate it, man. Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Many big-time newspapers have run mocking pieces by political pundits about the Occupy movement, denigrating it as confused and chaotic. In USA Today, for example, right-wing pundit Cal Thomas recently opined that, to the extent anyone can understand their core message, the occupiers apparently despised business and capitalism. Well, no, Cal. They despise corporate greed and political corruption, and their core message is really quite clear. The bankers, bosses, and others who make up the richest 1% of our society are further enriching themselves by knocking down the 99%. Maybe an up-close example of this would help Thomas see what the majority of Americans who support the Occupy movement are experiencing. Look no further than the very newspaper chain that's paying him to pontificate so cluelessly. Gannett, which owns USA Today and about 80 other papers, is a financial and journalistic wreck. In the past 6 years, its stock price has collapsed by 750%. It has fired 20,000 employees, stripped its newsrooms of their ability to do serious reporting, and cut the pay of remaining journalists while insisting that they work longer hours with less support. Craig Dubow, Gannett's CEO since 2005, presided over this debacle. He's now out, but he wasn't fired, as you and I would have been for such a failure. No, no. Instead, Gannett's board of directors handed Dubow, get this, $37 million as a go-away gift. This cushion of luxury came on top of the $16 million he was given in salary and bonuses during the past 2 years, as those workers who produced the product were being dumped and the corporation was tanking. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, Mr. Thomas, that's the reason so many are in the streets and in support of what the occupiers are saying. Can you relate?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
Cause in the real world they're shutting Detroit down, while the boss man takes his bonus pay, chips on out of town. DC bailing out the bankers as a partner to the auction ground. Yeah, while they're living it up on Wall Street in that New York City town.
While they're living it up on Wall Street, they are. Every community across this country is struggling. Struggling to pay the bills, struggling to not have to raise taxes, because you know what we've done? We've basically handed it over to Wall Street. We've handed it over to the financiers. You know, and talking with Todd Lipscomb, a whole bunch of stuff came rushing at me. Our trade deficits, the fact that other countries, you know, they're smart about it. They know that we have this ideology of open borders and free trade. And you know what? They can pick little pieces away. And when we were the most, really super, the most powerful economy in the world by far, it didn't matter if we lost little segments. We were big enough to absorb that. But I don't know if you've noticed, we don't have that manufacturing might that we once had, where we could lose a handful of factories here or there. Yeah, we could lose a little bit here. No, we don't have that anymore, because we've done it with so many countries. And I go back to Paul Craig Roberts, the guy who was in the Reagan administration, said, you know what? We're the only country in the world who gives away our wealth, gives away our industry, gives away our nation for nebulous foreign policy aims. George Carlin used to say it as well. You know, we go into places, we bomb them, we whip a little industry on them. Now, here it is. Here's your industry. Shut up a little while. Because after all, as Carlin said, U.S., those are the two middle letters in the word industry, U.S. And that's what we do. And we go around the world and we have to police the world now, because we've got interests in all those countries. Whenever I hear presidents or politicians saying, we need to protect our interests, who are we protecting? Multinational corporations. You know, the same multinational corporations who aren't paying any taxes. In fact, the same multinational corporations that we're actually paying to sometimes be here and everywhere else. Who's the dumb ones in all this? I mean, really, stop and think about it on a rational level. Our trade policies are insane. The people we send to Washington, D.C., I got to be honest, are insane, because we keep doing the same stuff that got us into the mess that we're in now. You look at China, they're not dumb. They figured it out. We're willing to give them anything that they want. And they're going to do it with our own money. And I think Todd alluded to that a little bit. Yeah, they're buying us with our own money. Why is that? Because we have these massive trade deficits. Every one of those little cheap trinkets we buy, and every piece of clothing, and every piece of electronics or whatever it is we buy from China or any other country, dollars go there. We pay for it in dollars, because remember, the dollar is the global currency. It is the reserve currency of the world. So we send that money over there. They got piles of cash. And in a functional world, where you had a country where the U.S. said, you know what, we're going to balance this out, they would have to use those dollars to buy things from us. Instead, what they're doing is they're just buying us. So we give them all this money. Christmas time's coming. Oh, boy. And the Chinese are going, oh, what industries do we want to buy? We're thinking about what toys to get for the kid. They're thinking about what industries they're going to buy for their country to take us over. And I sat and I listened today to the House floor, debating currency manipulation. And the Democrats are going, yeah, we'll pass that bill to make investing in small companies like eBay. Yeah, we'll pass that. Let's get on with it. The Republicans, they just want to talk about how wonderful it'll be when you can go online and you can invest $10,000 in some startup company like people do with music bands who ask for $20 up front and they'll give you a CD. That's all they wanted to talk about. The Democrats are going, hey, What about China? What about the currency manipulation? What about the 28 to 40% discount that their products get over ours? How about, you know, raising your hand and speaking up instead of this dumb stuff? We agree. But you don't hear that very often. You don't hear that we're funding our own demise. You know, the whole cash for clunkers thing, I was in favor of. Until I found out that there was going to be no American content position on it. Going, what, there doesn't have to be an American content in this? No. So whose economies did we stimulate? Everybody else's too. And if you turn around and you look at what's going on, Greece, for instance. Now, the reason that the banks are, everybody's screaming about Greece is our banks are in big trouble over there. We've got international banks running our country. Because the greed never ends. Look, if anything we should learn from this is that we need capital borders again. You know, I think Lou Prince was right. You know what? You know what we deregulated? The banking industry. And look what it did for us. You know, there was a time in my lifetime where every state had borders for banks. It had banking commissions in every state. We broke all that stuff down. And out of that grew these massive banks. And I think, you know, I think it was Shelby from Alabama this week said, you know, things worked a lot better when we had smaller banks. A Republican going, yeah, I think you're right. I think things worked better when we had smaller local banks. Then why aren't you moving towards getting us back to those days? You know, why aren't you moving back towards making things work for you and me, the small guy? You know, I listen to Republicans all day talk about how do we get small business growing again? And all they kept talking about was deregulation. And like Lou Prince said, deregulation doesn't hurt them. Regulation isn't killing them. The regulation they want to tear apart is air, water, safety, workers' rights. That's what they want to tear down. They want to take us back to the days of exploitable environment and of exploitable workers. I think we're smarter than that. I do. I really think, and I think what's going on across this country with all these occupations, I think people are finally coming to and saying, you know, I've had enough. There's some of this I just won't eat. And I love looking at one of the right-wing blogs tried to divide the 99% movement by saying, oh, I'm the 53%. And they all put out their little pages. Oh, I work 70 hours a week and I don't have health care. And, you know, I'm late behind my mortgage and my kids aren't going to go to college. But I suck it up and I pay my taxes and I'm one of the 53%. And I go, well, is that the way it should be? Really, you're doing what you're supposed to do. You're doing what you're told to do. You went to college. You got a job. You're paying your bills. You're doing everything you can. You're still falling behind. Is there not something wrong with that picture? And now look, I'm not talking about giving people stuff for free. I'm one of the folks who've been against welfare from the beginning. Welfare should not be a handout program. It should be a jobs program. I agree with people who say, you know, you want to eat, you got to work. I agree with that because there are therapeutic qualities to work. There's self-confidence. There's self-reliance. There's so much to it. So I'm with you with that. I'll go there with you. But to say that we shouldn't help anybody at all during times of crisis, not going there with you. Sorry. And I'm not going into a place where, oh, we want to create jobs, you do away with minimum wage, you do away with safety rule. I'm not going there with you either. We're a better society than that. We can be a better society than that. But all I hear from the Republicans and some Democrats, we need to deregulate. We need tax cuts for the very wealthy. We need to drill, baby, drill. We need more insane free trade agreements that put us in unwinnable competitions. And look, there are some people who say we compete with the rest of the world really well. I'm a firm believer in having a mechanism to balance out trade. You want us to buy your stuff? You're going to have to buy some of ours. It's that simple. And you don't make trade agreements open-ended. You make them renewable. You have sunsets. You have you tweak things as time goes on. Because, you know, with how much has been done with NAFTA since it passed? How much renegotiating has gone on there? I mean, we're getting our hats handed to us. How much renegotiating? None. How much is going to go on with South Korea or Colombia? Because do you think they're going to stop throwing labor leaders out of planes? I don't think so. So as we go down this path, next election's coming up this just in a couple of days. County commissioners are really important positions. Judges, really important. Which way do you vote? Do you vote for the people who have an ideology of screw the worker? We're in favor of big business? Because as my government teacher in high school said, the Republican Party, this was back in the 80s, are the party of big business. So do you continue to put the party of big business in power? I sure hope we learn that lesson. Now, the Democratic Party, somebody needs a smack and get them into line. Because increasingly, they're who knows where they are. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
I'm David Thoman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. So, more Herman Cain news. I guess number 3 has come out. I'm waiting for the floodgates to open. And I know there are folks who are tired of Herman Cain, but I know my next person, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, very tired of it. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty tired of it. Tomorrow, though, the National Restaurants Association is going to make a determination as to whether they're going to release this woman from her confidentiality clause about Herman Cain.
Do you think they'll cover for him? Do you think they'll take the heat for him by not letting her out?
It's hard to say. I don't know who the political guys who run the National Restaurants Association are these days.
Yeah, I mean, I would kind of want to say that they would because, you know, they want to get the stink off of them and they don't want all of the, you know, the anger towards them. But there's part of me that says they don't want to give people any idea of what they can get down the road if some of those things that may have happened are happening to them. Because I just saw a report, I forget, a huge number of women, I think it was like 9 out of 10 at some point during their working lives have a situation like that pop up.
Well, it's not surprising. I think I may have said to you, I had a talk show host come after me, and it was not pretty. And a friend of mine, Blanquita Cullum, who's in the business, really had to tell the guy to back off. And it was a whole lot more than what happened with Herman Cain. I mean, I was swimming in a pool, and he started to touch me in very inappropriate ways.
Wow. That's where I want to teach my daughters. If someone ever does that, a good shot right between the eyes.
Yeah, well, I just said, hey, knock it off.
And it's sad, you know, in this day and age, that's still going on. But here again, it says a lot to me about the decisions that Herman will make and the abuse of power, because that's what it really is about in that situation. The way I see it, it's an abuse of power.
Right.
So the occupation has moved. We've seen occupations in Oakland. Big day yesterday. Shut down the port of Oakland. All across the country here in Harrisburg. I guess they're moving into folks' offices now.
Well, that's right. Mitch McConnell's office today, they were opposing the infrastructure spending bill, which, as you know, went down today. And about 10 to 20 protesters entered his personal office, not his Senate office.
They were smart about the way they handled it, and they offered a meeting with the staff, but then they were giving water and chairs. They didn't get to McConnell.
Yeah, well, he's going to run out the back door as fast as he can. But for me, I got to be honest, you said that the infrastructure bill went down again. No surprise there. But, you know, yesterday, the big In God We Trust went through swimmingly well. We've now decided that again, that In God We Trust, national motto. So now that we've got that out of the way, yesterday I talked about, since we did it in 1956, we made that the official motto of the country. Can we do something else that we did in 1956, which was to pass a massive infrastructure bill that built the Eisenhower interstate system? Can we do that now? We got the God thing out of the way.
Wouldn't that make a lot of sense? And I am old enough that I remember when the Eisenhower structures were being built. They were huge. They were in front of my father's office.
I mean, it just makes sense to me. I mean, you know, if we're going to relive history, that's a good part of history. You did the God thing. Okay, I'm with you. Okay, there you go. How about now the jobs thing, like you promised? Just a thought.
Well, I think, you know, you've got people. I know you're going to Ohio, but you have people such as Steve LaTourette, moderate Republican, trying to say, look, we're not going to just all say no new taxes. We have to be realistic about this. And I put together 40 Republicans and 60 Democrats, and we're going to do it.
Yep. But doesn't that, when you look at that, doesn't that call into Grover Norquist's power? I mean, here in Pennsylvania, probably the most powerful guy in the state. I don't even know if he's ever been here, but he's got a governor wrapped around his finger who won't let a Marcellus Shale tax go through because he signed some idiotic pledge. You know, I look at D.C. I think every Republican in D.C. signed that idiotic tax pledge.
Well, what essentially happened, Luke Russert asked today Speaker Boehner, he said, does Norquist's presence on the Hill have a bad influence on the Republican conference? And Speaker Boehner said, we're here to talk about creating jobs. It's not often that I get asked about some random person.
Random person? Wow. That's not going to go over well at the next breakfast. No extra eggs for you, Boehner.
I know. Can you imagine?
But you know what it says to me, and I got to be honest, the more I listen to the Republicans, and I spend a good portion of the day listening to C-SPAN, there's this, they speak in good terms. Yes, we want to invest in the country, and we want roads and bridges, but their votes say completely otherwise. And any investment that we make, and you look at this committee vote that just came out, the party line vote on the energy stuff, and it's all because of this Solyndra. Again, the whole purpose being denying any investment in the future.
Well, yeah. And what's essentially happened with the Solyndra thing is that today on a 14-9 vote before the committee, they voted to subpoena the records despite the fact that they have been given 80,000 records by the Department of Energy, including 1,200 interactions about them with the White House.
But they're not on a fishing
trip. They just want to go on a huge fishing trip.
No, they're not on a fishing trip. They know exactly what they're looking for, they say. Which
well,
I guess is the president's BlackBerry.
Well, they ought to specify the language they're looking for and ask for that.
See, if you remember, we had this conversation right when it first came up, and I said I would back up the moving truck. and they'd get 53 feet, you know, worth of documents. They'd have hundreds of thousands of documents. It sounds like on a small scale, they did back up a pretty good sized truck.
I think so.
And lastly,
80,000 documents.
And lastly, you know, I've been talking about this Mississippi, this parenthood thing or personhood thing that's going on down there that even Haley Barbour, I think, said is a bit too far and a bit ambiguous. This idea that from something, I think it's conception, now you're considered a person.
Really crazy. And, you know, you have Mississippi, you have Florida. Debbie Wasserman Schultz gave a presser on that today. It's a lot. It's crazy.
I mean, there's, you know, my take on this has always been, and I've been talking about it for a couple of years now, the idea is not getting rid of Roe versus Wade. The idea is getting rid of Griswold, going back and taking all women's rights away, and especially the right to determine how many children you're going to have.
Yeah, well, look, I don't even have words for it.
Yeah, again, you know, I worry about our future. 7 billion people, 7 billion. Ellen.
Seven. You know, I wrote just to give you a perspective, my last perspective for the evening. When I was in junior high school, which was in the mid-60s, I had to write a biography. And I titled the biography, you know, we all had to write biographies in eighth grade or whatever, autobiographies. I titled mine 1 in 4 billion. 4 billion people in the mid-60s when I was growing up. Now 7.
Yep.
In one lifetime.
That's amazing. And they don't really see it stopping.
Right.
And to me, it comes down to, I read something that I think like four countries, us, Japan, Australia, and I think, I forget who the other one was, but those four countries make up about 20% of the globe, yet we consume over 80% of the natural resources.
Oh, that's a whole other discussion. I agree with you on that one.
Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Always great talking to you. Look forward to
Thank
talking to you again.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
I don't believe that God wants me to give my money to someone like you. But I do believe in what a crazy man
can do. Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner era, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13 did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9, ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner era. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitive use of child labor, was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
So you wake up in the morning, take your work and fight yourself, and then somebody tells you that you're over someone else. So what's it all about? It's money! Work it out!
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, there's where you would go to download the podcast, or if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. You can also email me, rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. According to a new report recently put out by CNN Money, members of the class of 2010 who took out loans to fund their college education, they owed an average of $25,250, which is 5% more than the class of 2009. And you look at another new report out by the folks at Inside Higher Ed, they're reporting that the majority of colleges are failing to provide public information on graduation rates for low-income students. At the end of the day, you know, when you got to be asking the question, as a society, are we getting the bang for our buck in education, or has it turned into a situation where we don't really care if those students pass, we don't really care if they get through, we don't care if they graduate, all we care about is the money? And increasingly, that seems what education has turned into. It's no longer about educating a society. It's no longer about educating our populace to be critical thinkers and to not continually be bamboozled by right-wing bizarre ideology. It's not about that anymore. It's about how do we have obedient workers? How do we have, you know, folks who aren't going to question too much authority? You know, earlier today I had a conversation with a friend of mine who said, you know, we're talking back and forth about the Occupy Wall Street thing, and, you know, how the Republicans have gone with the In God We Trust stuff. And I said, you know, I'm really concerned. I'm concerned what my kids are going to inherit when I pass on. You know, I've got you know, small children. What's 20 years down the road going to bring? What's 30, 50 years? What's their life going to be like if we continue this downward slide? And he responded back with something I thought really, really, you know, grabbed me and made me think. He said, there lies the resentment of it all. The fact that we never covet what others have, because we always believed our children would have a shot at it if they wanted it. And, you know, the story of the American dream is if you work hard, you're going to get ahead. If you play by the rules, you get a good education, you do what you're supposed to do, that's the ticket to the middle class. There are no guarantees, but you're pretty well in the right direction. That compromise, that promise there, that doesn't seem to be holding true. And you've got a generation of kids here coming out of college with 25, 26, 30. I talked to one kid, $118,000 in debt, going, I can't find a job. And, you know, when he wrote that, I'm thinking back to my own years as a, you know, as a browbeaten Catholic school child, who, you know, had the Ten Commandments beaten into me ad nauseum. And there was that, thou shalt not covet. And I don't look to others, I don't, with envy. But there is a point where you go, how much is enough? And for the good of society, do we not distribute wealth on a more equitable plane? Because what's going to happen to our children? I mean, there was that brief period, the 50s and the 60s, where, hey, I knew you knew your kids were going to do better. You knew the future was bright because we had built an infrastructure. There was growth. There was opportunity. We didn't allow corporations to run overseas. In fact, we didn't encourage them. In fact, we're giving tax breaks to companies to leave. Does that make any sense to you? On any level? Doesn't make any sense to me at all. But it's what we're talking about. And I look what Bill Gates came out with. And a lot of people are shocked. Oh, my goodness. Bill Gates is the champion. He's the champion of the Robin Hood tax. I guess everywhere else in the world, the Robin Hood tax has a positive connotation. Me, I'm sorry. If you got a ton of money, we're not stealing from you. We're asking you to pay a little bit more in. That's your responsibility to society. None of this nonsense that we're stealing from you. But he's the big champion. He's saying, well, globally, we need a transaction tax. The money that you could be doing, the good that you could be doing is what we need. And I talked about this, I guess, a month or so ago when I saw him at some kind of a forum over in the UK, and they had asked him about it. He said, yeah, I'm in favor of it. We could do an awful lot of good. You know, he said it's completely plausible that, you know, we can do this and it's going to help. He said, I'm lending some credibility to it. This money could be well spent and make a difference. And it's more possible than it was a year ago because people are in the streets, not just here, not just in developing countries, not just in Europe, but here. It's pretty amazing. And for people who invest in stock, you know, you're going to hold it for a while. It's not going to cost you much. I think the one that was put forth recently was 0.03%. The UK has a 0.25% transaction tax. We're talking about 0.03%. And we can't even get that passed through. But think of how much good it could do. And to have someone like Gates saying, you know what, yeah, we need to be doing this. I'm in favor of it. Anyway, last night we talked about the FBI classifying the Juggalos as gangs. Remember that? The clown posse, insane people, insane clown posse people. They're now, I guess, gangs, the Juggalos. Well, today I came across a story about a gigolo. Kind of different, but I thought it was funny that this guy had been arrested for being a gigolo, 83 years old. According to KTVO television out there in Iowa, the 83-year-old Iowa candidate was charged this week with offering to perform sex acts as a payment of debt. His name is Ben Clifford Dawson, and he has been charged with being a gigolo. The investigation began on October 22nd because a woman told police that Dawson had voluntarily to repay her loan with some services. She refused, and evidently he grabbed her and began showing her what he would do. He was arrested and released from the Appaloosa County Jail, $2,000 bond. He faces two aggravated misdemeanor charges for prostitution and intent to commit sexual abuse. Staunch Republican who then changed his party affiliation, according to the woman who was, propositioned. She said, I don't believe he's staunch anything. It'll be interesting to see if he wins on November 8th. I'm going to keep him on my list. For those folks who, and I don't know what it is about old people and sex today, but somewhere up in Wilkes-Barre, don't know if you saw the story, a man has pled guilty in federal court to tampering with food products. 60-year-old Joseph Bartolio of Larksville, he entered the plea yesterday. 2-year prison term. Dates have not been set. Turns out our 60-year-old friend thought it'd be a good idea to inject semen into people's food, into two women's food, I guess. He says he's very, very remorseful, and there was no logical reason for his behavior. But he said he barely knew the two women in the workplace. And his lawyer says, I don't even think he knows why he did it. So there you go. I gotta wonder about that. Also, I don't know if you've seen this. The people of Wisconsin decided to have a day of let's conceal a camera. 18 were arrested in the Wisconsin legislature for using cameras. It was concealed camera days, because evidently you can carry a concealed weapon in the Wisconsin Capitol, but you cannot conceal the camera there by the General Assembly Gallery. So 18 folks arrested. They're saying, look, this is a violation of the First Amendment because Wisconsin has open meeting laws. So that'll be interesting to see. And I thought it was kind of funny. Concealed camera. But guns are okay. We'll put that down on your next resume. What were you arrested for? Carrying a concealed camera. Sad. Sad, sad, sad. Speaking of Wisconsin, Republicans have passed an abstinence-only bill that is going to prohibit teachers from, educating children about something other than being ignorant. We're going back to the days of the Flintstones, according to one of the state senators, John Eppenbach. Look, at the end of the day here, you want to preach abstinence only, that's one thing. But also say, look, you need to learn how to protect yourself. At least have the basic knowledge, the basic understanding. Evidently, Wisconsin wants to become Mississippi. As a parent, I would be furious. But thanks to this bill, teachers will no longer be allowed to talk about anything having to do with contraception. It's all about the abstinence. So it looks like Herman Cain, his strategist, this Mark Block, he has said he will quit smoking if and when Herman Cain wins the presidency. I think it's pretty well safe to assume that Mr. Block will smoke for a very long time. Chances are probably gonna bite it because of lung cancer, but I don't see him quitting smoking anytime soon. In fact, I think this sex scandal thing probably gonna hurt him. But that kind of a prediction, not a bad idea. You know, what do you got to lose? If he wins and you have to quit smoking, it's probably gonna do your health some good, save you a couple of bucks on cigarettes. But some other bad predictions. This guy, Chris Brown of Midland, Texas, he decided that he was going to get a big tattoo on his arm, take up the entire forearm. And it said Super Bowl XLV1, which is the next Super Bowl. He said the champions are going to be the Houston Texans. Tattooed that on his arm. Super Bowl champion, Houston Texans, with the Super Bowl number. That is, you know, that's one of those things you go, it's nice that you're confident in the team that you root for, but I don't know many people who actually give the Houston Texans a snowball's chance in Texas of actually winning the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's kind of like getting drunk, going to a place and having some girl that you don't know is name tattooed on your backside. You're kind of in trouble. So good for him. You know, I'm quite happy that you're seeing dumb people doing dumb things. Anyway, I want to thank everybody who was on the program this evening. I go back to this whole Buy American thing. There's really an opportunity. I think it was 60 Minutes or ABC News who said, if we just spent like $60 each on American-made products, we could create a couple hundred thousand jobs. I do think it's something worth considering. The next time you go into the big box, or the next time you need something, to look at the tag. I'm everly amazed every time I ask somebody who has one of the jingoistic t-shirts on, I love America, and they got the flag and all that stuff. I like to ask them where it was made. Or if they walk around with the big flower pots with the American flag on it, or even if they're waving the flag. It's nice to know, hey, where your flag's made? Did you ever look at that? I actually found a guy, one of the tea people, walking around with a tea flag made in Mexico. Yeah. The material was made in Mexico. It was printed here in the U.S., but the actual material made somewhere else. So it's worth taking a couple of minutes looking at, because, you know, the job you may save, yeah, might be your own. Anyway, I want to thank everyone. Thank you for being here. And again, if you missed any portion of our program, TheRickSmithShow.com. Best place to go. You can download the podcast. If you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app. Take your program with you. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. See you tomorrow night. Have a good one.
It's coming from the wind. You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the U.S.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Good memories are forever. Send the dog.
Stunning. It is unbelievable.
Well, don't be surprised at the end of the season at all. And,
well, yeah, who knows? I mean, David's, they have until last time they started in January and they had 50 games. So, or they did a deal in January.
Yeah, maybe this is LeBron's ring.